It's showtime.
Go head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head on with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bycod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. And away we go. We're off and running for this 18th day of December 2018. This is The Horn, headon.live. It's where we live. And that's where you go if, of course, you'd like to click on chat room and then jump in, pick out a screen name, a password, and begin participating in the wacky, zany, merry, madcap multimedia extravaganza that takes place during the hours in which this program is live from 6 to 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. If you do, you'll be greeted by Anatole and Otto and VT Blom, and capably moderated by longtime inveterate, indefatigable veteran chat room moderator Sparky, who, as a Spacing Guild master getting over a nasty cold, has chosen this evening to stay in the warm and comfy confines of Shea Sparky and not fold space to become Man Cave. And just keep getting better, Sparky. Just keep getting better. You'll also be moderated by a pinch-hit midweek utility chat room moderator and all-around great guy, Steve from Georgistan. I'm also there in a moderator capacity, but I'm immoderate. So I'm about as useful as a kickstand on a steamship there, where that's concerned. But hi, I'm Bob Kincaid, and it's Titanic Tuesday on the Horn, and we have thanks to send out, as we always do. Or almost always. It's only like the 31st and the 30th and the 29th when there are absolutely no subscribers. I think we've got all the other dates pretty close to filled in. Not sure, but pretty close. But we've got thanks to send out. Thank you very kindly for being a partial subscriber and so much more, Charlene in Rogues Island. And thanks as well to Stephen. Thank you, Stephen, very kindly. And thank you very kindly to Grace. It is all very, very helpful. And in fact, our subscribers knock out about a week's worth of the fundraising in any given month. Thank you very, very kindly indeed. And what's more, well, doggone it, we've got, it's that time of year. I'll just say it's that time of year. I have here before me, not in my hot little hands, because we're trying to save a tree or two, and so it's merely digital in form. It's on the screen. A note from our buddy, Paul, from Parts Unknown. Dear Bob, I've been delayed making the Paulmans as early as I wanted to due to a horrible long-lasting head cold that lasted just shy of 2 weeks. You know, I wonder if maybe that's the same thing Sparky had. I figured the Horn community didn't need a free head cold with their Paulmans this year. However, I've been peeling and roasting like crazy this week and last weekend, and I should have the supply ready this week and be able to mail them this Friday or Saturday. So they won't arrive before Christmas, but you will definitely get them before New Year's. So today, the 18th of December, 2018, I'm officially putting forth the annual Paulmand Challenge. I'm offering 2 pounds of Paulmans, that's 0.9 kilograms for those outside the U.S., to the first 4 Horn members that donate $50 or more to the Horn. The price has gone up to help Bob get out of the fundraising hole that he's in, and I'm offering one more tin than usual to give a chance at someone who's never had them before. For those new to Palmans, these are gluten-free, vegan, handcrafted holiday treats that won't expand your waistline. Each almond has its skin meticulously peeled by hand, then put on a baking sheet with sea salt and extra virgin olive oil, and then it's carefully roasted to perfection until it has become a Palmand. Many skeptics believe that such simple ingredients cannot truly transform an almond into something magical that will make your taste buds sing with holiday cheer, but our product spokesman, Bob Kincaid, will tell you, and I will, that they are tasty beyond belief. My goodness gracious, they are. I sit around thinking about this time of the year largely because of the Palmands. Tasty beyond belief, yes. Bob does not hawk any products on Conversation Radio. No Buy Gold Now ads, no Swedish mattresses you can drop bowling balls on, and definitely no lumber liquidation products. However, the only product Bob will back on his program is the Palmands. They're just that good. The only payment that Bob receives for being our spokesperson is a free tin of Palmands for him and his family, but they're mostly for Ferg if you don't catch him quick enough before he eats them all. God, that is so true. I have to haunt the mailbox. Otherwise, he'll just sit over there and golem like, precious Palmands. Paul, however, continues, but wait, there's more. Palmands are trying to branch out and attain another spokesperson. This year, a free tin is going to the Blue Dot in Texas, John Bridevo. Hopefully I spelled it right. So we will soon have two voices out there on the internet that can testify about the impossible deliciousness of Palmands. You can also hear testimonials from longtime Palmand fans like Carol in Hooterville or Michael in Madison. I encourage any listeners who have not tasted them yet to donate and give them a try. You won't be disappointed. And in point of fact, I will add that Palmands reached out beyond their usual confines last February. Yes, they did, and Palmands went to the Big Apple and were snacked upon and enjoyed all around. Yum, yum. No kidding. Just absolutely delicious. So, as Paul says, give him a try. You won't be disappointed. Just send Bob Kincaid an email, bobkincaid@gmail.com, with your package mailing address and your donation, and I'll get them out to you. Act fast. Odds are that at least one tin, if not two, have already been claimed while Bob has been reading this email on the air. Happy holidays to the whole Horn community. Signed, Paul, from Parts Unknown. P.S. Hardest thing this year was the tragic passing of Anthony Bourdain, whom I was a huge fan of and where I took my Horn nickname from. Rest in peace, good sir. You were an inspiration to me and one of the reasons I was able to improve the recipe of the Palmands to make them as good as they are. How about that? I think if we were doing a year in review, and we don't because there's always so much day in review to do on any given day, that I would agree that that was probably, that was the one that hit me the hardest this year, was Anthony Bourdain. What a waste. But at the risk of going all Debbie Downer on that, I'm not, because the Palmands are a holiday fixation, a holiday staple here at the Horn, and they don't last long. And if you want them, with a contribution of at least $50, Paul will ship them to you, and he'll ship them, not me. So, and Paul is very, very good about getting this stuff out. So, if you have ever heard about this, and if you have seen a holiday season go by in the past and said, damn, I wanted some. Here's your chance. Here is your chance. And it couldn't come at a better time either, because, we finished the night at -180 last night, and of course 200 to raise this evening. This is the final week of fundraising, both of December and of 2018. And so our fundraising goal is at $380, and with the four tins gone, once the four tins are gone, well, that'll make up, that'll finish yesterday and $20 worth of today. So thank you, Paul. Thank you very, very kindly. Just shoot me a note, bobkincaid@gmail.com. These things will blow your mind. I mean, we're talking about some... And Paul's right. You know, there's a simplicity to them that, in a way, cannot encompass their delightfulness. I mean, crunchy and the flavor and the roasty toasty and, I mean, if it was me, and it won't be me because I don't do this anymore, but it occurred to me at some point in time that a nice bowl of Palmans sitting next to a freshly drawn pint of Guinness, for instance, this holiday season, would go stupendously. So again, usually when this when the Palmans hit, they're gone in minutes. So jump out there while they're here. I doubt if they'll last through the evening. And I don't know, maybe folks are a little late to the game or whatever, but that's where they stand, and you definitely want these if you're an almond or a nut snacking kind of, yeah, these are. And he's not kidding. He peels every almond by hand. I mean, that's the labor part of it that just makes me go, what? But yes, every almond lovingly peeled by hand. This is why they can never, you'll never be able to find them, you know, when you make that late night munchie run to the Rippy Mart, because I don't think machine peeled Palmans would be Palmans. I just don't. Let's see. And so, all that having been said, yeah, we've got a $380 fundraising goal, and what a lovely day it's been. You know, I don't think we're going to talk about the things we talked about on the program last night anymore. Scott was very genial and well-wishing. I mean, there was real warmth and genuineness in what he said last night, talking about, you know, what it means to do this program, that sort of thing. And I responded that there are days that, you know, you just don't want to be behind. And today tried really hard to be one of those days. Got up this morning. Margie had an appointment for an echocardiogram over in Somersville. And we just bebopped out to the vehicle. And as I drove about 15 feet down the road, I stopped and said, something here doesn't feel right at all. And then in a master stroke of closing the barn door after the horse is gone, the tire inflation light came on the vehicle, you know, after the tire was flat. So it turns out, and I mentioned this a couple of weeks ago, and this is, you know, I don't say this as a matter of crawling up on the cross, because I know we all need the wood, but just as a reminder that, well, you know, there's not a lot of folks who talk about ordinary American life out there because, well, there aren't a lot of ordinary Americans out there doing this sort of thing. You know, apart from dear friends like Mike Malloy and Rick Smith, there aren't. And so today, I mentioned a couple of weeks ago, I found out there's a crack in one of the wheels, and I was hoping to get through the holiday season before I had to deal with it, but no, that's not going to happen. And so it was flat as a pancake. And, what's that, boss? So I walked back in and said, "Merry Christmas, darling," to Agnes. "Your gift this year is two tires and a half of a wheel." And so that's basically a big chunk of what we're going to be taking care of this week when we get if we get fundraising squared away. And Agnes looked at me and said, "Why, darling, you got me half of a wheel?
What a coincidence. I got you half of a wheel, too. Now we have a whole wheel. And a couple of weeks ago, I got a note from Randy in PA saying, listen, if you need to use that for the use, because Randy sent along to help out. He likes to do a holiday dinner for Boss Man Wayne and Agnes and Dr. Bill and me. He said, nah, use that on wheel. Well, that's what's going to happen. So thank you in that regard. And, of course, there'll have to be four new tires because the manual is very, very persnickety about saying don't just change one damn tire because you'll ruin your transfer case or the anti-flage won't properly combobulate with the Knutton valve or something like that. So, yeah, ho, 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 we're going to put four tires under the Christmas tree. But that's about it. And so it was worrisome because, A, we weren't just going out frittering around. We were going to a medical appointment for Margie, and so that's got to be rescheduled. And, B, I'm hoping the wheel will be here by Thursday, which means maybe getting it dealt with by Friday. Oi! I picked a hell of a time to quit sniffing glue. I really, really did. What's that, Scott? Mattress test? I completely ruined my Swedish mattress by dropping a load of liquidated lumber onto it. Yeah, after that I wouldn't be much use. I mean, when you think about the potential for splinters and where the potential for where the splinters might go, I can see that would just ruin a day altogether. So, yeah, no great argument from me. No way. But it is, all things being equal, it's Titanic Tuesday on the horn, the 18th, yeah. And so we, just a general reminder for people who aren't necessarily long-time listeners, yeah. Titanic Tuesday is named for something that our buddy Jim who's up in Morgantown now heard a lot of years ago when the Morning Monotone over in America's fifth smallest radio market said, he took a caller from one of his mouth-walking, knuckle-breathing faithful and said, the faithful said, Steve, how come you reckon it is there is seashells in the rocks here in West Virginia? I done seed them down in the mine once upon a time. To which Steve replied in a monotone that was breathtaking, well, caller, that's because of the movement of the Titanic plates. You realize how difficult it is for somebody like me to say something with absolutely no inflection, no mood, no stresses, just truly monotone is not easy to accomplish. But he did it every day. But yes, the movement of the Titanic plates. Mm-hmm. No word so far on the movement of the Titanic in the egg, in the shell egg scrambler. Just now. Yeah. So, with that in mind, Titanic Tuesday is dedicated to Titanic, humongous, exhibitions of right-wing intellect. And we're well set. Oh, yes. Okay, then. So, an example? Would anyone be interested in an example? In an example? Yes, yes, by all means, let's do. You may recall, some while back, we had a clip from a clown by the name of Josh Bernstein. And I'm not talking about of the Bernstein Bears or anything from Highlights for Children, something delightful and happy-making, or at least benign. No, Josh Bernstein is a self-appointed white-wing commentator who, among other things, has suggested that cops need to be killed if they participate in a Democratic gun grab. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, he too is thinking about the new Congress. And in particular, he's thinking, and I'm sure it does his little heart good to know it, he's thinking about Lindsey Graham taking over the Senate Judiciary Committee. And he's got things that Josh Bernstein does that he wants done. You might, you know, Titanic Tuesday is a day for the hockey pucks. You might want to grab yours now.
And you know what we should do? When President Trump builds the wall, here's what he should do. Number one, we should have the new Senate Judiciary Committee Chairman, Lindsey Graham. Hopefully he's grown some balls here, and he's actually going to be a good...
Wait.
Senate Judiciary Chairman, he needs to subpoena all the players in the deep state, all of them. Comey, Mueller, McCabe, Stroke, Page, Nellie Orr, Bruce Orr, Weissman, Rosenstein, Loretta Lynch, Hillary Clinton, Barack Obama.
Loretta Lynn? Oh, Loretta Lynch. Oh, I'm sorry. I thought maybe he had some sort of an animus against 86-year-old country superstars for a minute there. It's Titanic Tuesday. Anything could happen. But Loretta Lynch. Right. Okay.
I'm sure I'm forgetting a few. Get them down there, and when they come down all at once, padlock the door. Padlock the door and instruct the Sergeant of Arms of the Senate and the Capitol Police to zip tie these scumbags and put handcuffs on them and drag them into a tribunal.
Well, at least he's not calling them for them to be dragged into the basement of Comet Ping Pong Pizza. Take your victories where you can find them, I suppose. These scumbags! Oddly enough, this is of recent vintage. This came from yesterday. This was what Josh Bernstein was blithering about yesterday. A day in which we found out, for instance, that a little 7-year-old girl was deprived of water at the Mexican-American, well into the United States in New Mexico, and that she was probably given water so toxic and so tainted and so dangerous that people who work at the forward operating base where she was initially detained won't touch the water, won't drink the water, won't wash with the water, won't wash clothing in the water, won't cook with the water, won't shower with the water, won't wash their cars with the water. But somehow or another, morally bankrupt Josh Bernstein, his anger is all aimed at the deep state. You know, which is entirely imaginary. Mm-hmm. Referring to Barack Obama, Hillary Clinton, Robert Mueller, James Comey, Peter Strzok, etc., Andrew McCabe as scumbags. You know, it's funny. I've just got a difference. Maybe that's the difference between left and right in this country. I've got a different definition of scumbag. Like, for instance, somebody who deprives a 7-year-old little girl of clean water after she's walked safely, reasonably speaking, 1,000 miles across, Guatemala and a whole lot of Mexican desert. And then you give her poisoned water. That guy's a scumbag to me. Those people are scumbags to me. Those people need to be standing in a dock, again, to me. But this Yahoo, this titanic white wing intellect, well now, I guess he's probably 200 proof QAnon, don't you?
And you can set up the tribunal through executive action. That is something the president can do. So therefore, you could have a trial on the same day that you arrest these creeps and put them in Guantanamo Bay. Or better yet, when you build the wall, force them, like in North Korea, to have to build it and let them wear their $3,000 and $4,000 and $5,000 suits. Wouldn't you love to see Hillary Clinton in an orange pantsuit with a shovel in her hand?
You know, I think if I were Josh Bernstein's psychoanalyst, I would suggest to him that he tries to get through, you know, start small, Josh, start small. It's all one day at a time in 12-step world. But for you, buddy, we're going to start. And you know, it could start right there in the analyst's office. Josh, we're going to try to go 1 minute without saying or thinking about Hillary Clinton. Can you do it? Hillary Clinton! Oh, the deep state! No, see, Josh, that means we have to start with a fresh minute. And go. So, how about those dolphins, Josh? Dolphins? Dolphins? My God! Did you know that dolphins with sonar helmets attached to them were used by Hillary Clinton? Josh, we're going to try again, Josh, just 1 minute at a time. And then, you know, once we've successfully not thought about Hillary Clinton or shrieked or howled for a minute, we'll try for two. Okay? We still haven't gotten the first minute under our belt, Josh. Okay, Josh, let's see. Holiday seasons are coming, Josh. Do you celebrate Christmas or Hanukkah or Kwanzaa or Wiccan Yule? Hillary Clinton tried to. It was a big part of the war on Christmas. Oh, Josh, damn it, buddy. I'm sorry, Josh. There's nothing left for you, but well. We're going to have to turn you over to Comet Ping Pong Pizza and let them take you down to the basement there and, oh, I don't know, force feed you artichoke hearts or something until you get, well, oh, just see you next week, Josh.
I know I would. We ought to do that. These people need to go down for the count. These people are seditious, they are treasonous, and they need to be held accountable.
Now, here's the funny thing about all this treasonous and seditious business. He is apparently on the watch list of the Goddess of Irony because today Michael Flynn went in for his sentencing hearing, and the darn thing got continued because, and again, we'll kind of get off into the weeds here. Wait a second, let me go back to the email for a minute. Ron in Raleigh says, so, Bob, you and Agnes are going all Gift of the Magi this holiday season? Ah, love is a many splendored thing. Yes, yes, yes it is. And good literary pickup there for the O. Henry Gift of the Magi. Well played, Ron in Raleigh, well played. Jack in Shreveport. you know the routine, do you, Jack? Oh, and will you want those four new tires mounted and balanced today? And would you like to purchase tire insurance with that? Nah, just throw them in the back of the car and I'll ride back home on the rims. Yeah, I know. Steve in New York, meanwhile, subject line, a scumbag to me, a person who cheats on his wife while the wife cares for his four-month-old child. Yeah, that's out of the... That's one that apparently never much occurred to Josh Bernstein either, because after all, remember, the official defense is he's a billionaire, and you know billionaires behave that way. How I sincerely wish that was some sort of a bit or a joke or something, but it's not. We had the clip in the last, within the last week. Yes. Mm-hmm. Hey, but, hey, thank you very kindly to Charlie. Charlie in Tennessee, our buddy Charlie, who knocked us down to 350 bucks to go this evening. Thank you, Charlie. That's huge. Ron, in the far frozen north, says, old Josh should not only be taken to the basement, he should be force-fed salads comprised totally of crushed baby's breath flour, flowers, and kale. I was thinking we might give him some of that high-quality California cauliflower. You know, the stuff that's flavored with that special spray they spray on at that farm, yes. Good. Now, I don't want any harm to come to Josh. I just hope that someday he somehow manages to miraculously get a brain. Get a brain, morons. Get a brain. It, right. But it's Titanic Tuesday. And so we find ourselves dealing with some examples of genuine, Titanic intellect, the likes of which we don't often see. I mean, this is high quality stuff. Take for instance, a guy named Dickland. We've talked about Dickland here before, in on the Horn. You know, he used to be the head Southern Baptist, and then he moved on to some sort of counsel kind of emeritus position. But he's still out there, and he's no better than he was back during the Reign of Error when he was supporting the unjustified, indefensible slaughter of a million Iraqi civilians at the hands of George W. Bush and Count Dicula. And he went on something called the Dove TV, where he offered up, well, I hesitate to use full-throated because it sounds kind of gross, but yes, a full-throated endorsement and praise of the, this is a genetic marvel that is Julius Geezer.
You're close to the president. How's he doing? How's he doing with all this pressure?
He's doing fine. I just talked this morning to a friend of mine who sees the president virtually every day. He's in Washington, works in the West Wing, and by the way, is in his early 30s and says, I get here at 7. I try to leave by 10 in the evening, and he says the president is wearing us all out. This 72-year-old man is wearing us all out. But he said the president is optimistic. The president is plunging ahead. The president does not have a reverse gear. He's got is first, second, and third gear going forward, and maybe four-wheel drive. And he was upbeat. I was going to encourage him, and he was encouraging me. I would think being chief of staff to President Trump would be more difficult than virtually any president in my memory, because President Trump is the Energizer Bunny. Mm-hmm. I mean, the man, you know, he gets up at 5 in the morning, he goes to bed at midnight, and it's full bore all the way in between. I mean, It's really, he's a genetic marvel.
I told you he said genetic marvel. I don't just make this stuff up. You know, and the fact of the matter is, if Julius Geezer could do all of that without a few rails of crushed up Adderall throughout the day, he would be a marvel. But because the goddess of irony keeps her eye on Dickland too, he gets described as the Energizer Bunny. Well, he certainly does. He certainly, apparently, at least in the past, has fucked like one. I mean, he committed, and remember, this guy's a noble 33rd degree, exalted pish posh of the Baptist Church. Okay, this is a church that has rules that say that a Baptist minister should not marry a couple if one of the two members of the couple has ever been married before. But old Dickland here, no sir, he's got no qualms with a guy who cheated on wife number one with wife number two, cheated on wife number two with wife number three, and cheated on wife number three with porn star one and Playboy Bunny one. You know, there's a reason that much of Protestant Christianity is dead and dying. And Dick Land's a big part of it. And what's that, Marty? Sees the president every day he's in the White House? I guess this guy doesn't see him that much. Also, the Energizer Bunny, and they accused Barry Bonds of being on the juice. And he bets he's getting some of what Elaine's parents import. I know. Look, the goddess of irony owns all these people. And the thing is, old Dickland wasn't done.
My experience with the president and the experience of people that are much closer to him than I am is he's a very different man than he was 5 or 10 years ago. He's a very different man morally. He's a very different man spiritually. I think
conveniently, 10 years ago is 2 years after he was rutting away on May Eller in the immediate aftermath of the birth of his son, little Boron. Because he gave up his adulterating ways, and Jesus done forgived him, and there's no proof that he ever asked for it, but, you know, grace and whatever, and, yeah, more Titanic.
The nature of his third marriage is one that Christians would be much more comfortable with.
Than the first two, even though Jesus absolutely forbade divorce. I mean, it's fact, it's just there. But that's, that, you know. The third marriage. They'd be approving of the third marriage. Now, the second marriage and the first marriage. But wait a minute. Ivanka and Eric and Don Jr. were all born during the first marriage. Does that mean that they're not approved by the Southern Baptist Convention? This guy's going to wind up in the shape of a pretzel before this clip is done. Ron in the far frozen north says, Adderall is what you use to get her all. Yep. That's a good one. Alexander, meanwhile, pointing out, yes, Chump is different, all right. He's eviler. Yeah. Eviler. I like Ebeler. Ron in Raleigh says, I'll bet Jabba the Trump is a national treasure as well. What in the name of all things holy is wrong with these white folks and Jesse Lee Peterson? Well, it's nice that Jesse Lee's getting a little notice in there now. That's mighty kind of you, Ron. National treasure. And just like Phyllis Schlafly. Earthers, the genetic marble. And his breath always smells like fresh minty ham. Well, he is marbled after all. Meanwhile, going back to Josh Bernstein, Ron pointed out. What Josh needs, although it's not done much anymore, I think Josh could do with an old-fashioned pre-orbital frontal lobotomy. Then maybe some of those bizarre thoughts will fade away. Is there? Well, I don't know, Ron. Is there a Hillary Clinton center of the brain in the average white winger? I don't know. Yeah, you're back to Dickland.
Than his first two marriages, I think he's a better husband, a better father, a better man.
Yeah, that's why he. Because he's a better husband and a better man, that's why he keeps the umbrella over him and walks up and off and leaves Melanoma standing there in the driving rain, and he's paying so much attention to her now that she's bleached her hair a sort of streetwalker blonde, just to try to look a little bit more like Ivanka, because he never says she reminds him of Ivanka, like he said to Stormy Daniels and Karen McDougal, "You were great. You remind me of Ivanka." Ew.
Than he was 5-10 years ago. But, you know, he's not a perfect man. None of us are.
Yeah.
Well, there's not perfect in there. Then there's not perfect.
Look, once again, let's always understand that we made the decision about this president in a particular context. And the particular context was that in the general election, as I've said before, he was my last choice in the primaries. But when it came down to a binary choice between Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump, I'll take Donald Trump.
Oh, goddess of irony on line one, Dick.
Every day and twice on Sundays. I believe Donald Trump is a more moral man than Hillary Clinton is.
And see, now, once again, we're going to confirm my conviction that there is no great big bearded juvenile delinquent in the sky, because that Donald Trump is a more moral man and more of a law abider should have resulted in said great big bearded juvenile delinquent in the sky sending a lightning bolt right down that would have left nothing but a greasy spot of Dickland. Just kind of makes you wonder what sort of things old Dick gets up to when nobody's a-watching.
A moral woman. I believe he's more moral. I believe he's more of a law abider. I believe he's a far better person to be president of the United States than Hillary Clinton.
Well, that's the power of belief, I suppose. Jesus Christ, these people. But as you can tell, it's been rather a busy day already for Titanic Intellect. Bad day for Titanic Intellect of white wing defenders of Michael Flynn, including but not limited to the President of the United States, who got up this morning, because remember, he gets up at 5 o'clock every day. Well, does he? Or is that just what time he needs his next rail? I think that's a fair question. Let me answer this real quick. Okay, that's weird. Apparently, TuneIn gagged, but no, we're streaming merrily along here. But no, the President of the United States. Got all perky this morning and then started tweeting witness interference. to Michael Flynn. You might recall when he fired Michael Flynn, he said, "Oh,
he's been lying to us. I can't have a liar around me."
But now, all of a sudden, today, he was tweeting,
"Best of luck to Michael Flynn. Sure will be interesting to see what he has to say."
And then he gets in front of the federal judge there in Washington, D.C. And I was going to go into this a minute ago, and I sidetracked myself. That happens from time to time around here. When the parties to a criminal prosecution agree that they're going to forego a trial by the defendant entering an agreed upon plea of guilty, that agreement is reduced to writing. And it sets out in granular detail what will be expected of the parties. And in the case of Michael Flynn, both sides agreed that it was possible that there would be no jail time, and that the United States would in fact recommend no jail time. They wouldn't be standing there with their shoe off, pounding on the table, demanding to send Michael Flynn to the hoosegow. But there are two kinds of plea agreements. One kind is in the way of a recommendation to the court, and the other kind actually binds the court's hands in terms of what the outcome can be. Now, the nature of the plea agreement that the Mueller team entered into with Flynn was not binding upon the court. Not in the least. The court was free to reject it. And courts often do not like agreements that take away the discretion of the presiding judge anyway. So that was the status when the hearing began this morning. There was a plea in place. The plea had been made and the reports had been done, and it was all set for sentencing. And then the judge decided to make things really, really interesting. Because, among other things, he brought up the T word. The only crime defined inside the four corners of the Constitution of the United States. Treason. No other crimes are defined. Treason is. Because the framers felt like in setting up the controlling principle for the government that would unfold beneath it, that there might be some hard feelings along the way. And people might be inclined to throw the T word around at each other because in their experience and in the history of English civil wars, for instance, whoever was on the wrong side often wound up losing their heads over treason. And they didn't want to get off on the bed, on the wrong foot. But there was the judge this morning, lo and behold, asking counsel for Michael Flynn. Whether his client might possibly have been charged with treason. The charge was lying to the FBI about, say, his interactions, shall we say, with the Russian ambassador, one Sergei Kislyak. But after he dropped the T-bomb, Judge Emmett Sullivan said, yeah, I'm going to put off this sentencing hearing for a little while to give you a chance to more fully cooperate with the government. Because Judge Sullivan had eventually pulled an admission out of Flynn's defense team that there was no coercion upon Flynn to plead guilty. Judge Sullivan apparently pays attention a little bit to the electric TV machine from time to time and noted that the folks over on Fox News TV, Radio Rwanda, among others, that somehow or another there had been some dirty business that resulted in Flynn being forced to plead guilty, including the President of the United States typing in all caps, inexplicably,
entrapment.
And so Judge Sullivan looked at the defense team and said, is it your contention that Mr. Flynn was entrapped by the FBI? At which point the incredibly uncomfortable lawyer said, no, Your Honor. But nevertheless, after the hearing, Sarah Hasselbeck Sandbags, who hopes to be remembered, she said, for her honesty and transparency. Yes, yes, of course she does. She said, we know that was inappropriate by own self-admittance of James Comey, is that we know that the FBI broke standard protocol in the way they came in and ambushed General Flynn, and in the way they questioned him, and the way they encouraged him not to have White House counsel present. James Comey told us that they said the reason they did it was because it was the Trump administration and they thought they could get away with it. And that crap was all over Fox News TV, Radio Rwanda. Then they dug up Andy McCarthy, a former assistant U.S. attorney, and one of those paid liars over at Fox. Then he said, I think to say that, as Flynn did, that he was not entrapped means that he doesn't believe that he has a legal entrapment defense. That's a very different thing from saying that everything that happened here was by the book. Jesus. And curiously, Alan Dershowitz, and remember, for Alan Dershowitz, everyone who has ever brought him a cold cup of coffee is a Nazi. Alan Dershowitz said, Flynn was coerced into pleading guilty to a crime which he was innocent. He was coerced by threats against his son, against his fortune, and the reason I think he was innocent is even if he told an untruth, which it seems as if he did, it was not a material untruth. As Ron in the far frozen north points out, poor General Flynn has already sold his house for past legal bills, and probably doesn't have enough money to hire a competent legal team. All this to keep his son out of jail. Greater love hath no man than to fuck up before a federal judge who was born irritable. Yeah, that Alan Dershowitz. Alexander. Matt Schlapp. Remember the one who stomped out of the White House Correspondents Association dinner last year because of all the nasty elites. Matt Schlapp, who's married to a woman named Mercedes, and the both of them are multimillionaires. Those Schlapps, yes. And then there was what happened over the weekend. Judge Jeanine Pirro. Oh my God, what a piece of work. She said,
so the issue is, will this judge make a decision on his own to vacate the plea which Flynn has not asked for? And the amazing part of it, if he does, the house of cards of Robert Mueller falls. A judge unafraid of the swamp, a judge with a track record of calling up prosecutorial misconduct, a judge who does not permit injustice or abuse of power.
And then that judge who's unafraid of the swamp, the judge with a track record of calling out prosecutorial misconduct, a judge who does not permit injustice or abuse of power, looked at Flynn today and said, I'm not hiding my disgust, my disdain for this criminal offense. Arguably, you sold your country out. I'm going to ask you one more time. Would you like for me to continue this hearing? Instead of imposing sentence right now like I'm inclined to do, so you can have a chance to set the record straight and fully cooperate with the government. And if he had said, bring me the head of Donald Trump on a platter, it could not have been more clear. Because, see, I'll bet you that their judge knows things that are in that file that you and I, nor Andy McCarthy, nor Jeanine Pirro, nor Alan Dershowitz know. Matt in San Francisco with a good question. Material truth, is that lying about your pants being polyester instead of cotton? Yes, and it's also, well, one would argue it is material if you say, sir, are you lying so much your pants are on fire? And the guy says no, and you're standing there with the smoke coming up out of your trouser legs. And even if he did lie, it wasn't a material lie. Immaterial is, well, having nothing to do with the issue at hand. Sir, on the 31st day of February 2018, did you in fact have 3 scoops of garlic rhubarb ice cream? Yes, sir, I did. That's immaterial And I've ruined meals all across the country now by mentioning garlic rhubarb ice cream. Except there's probably somebody in the community going, you know, I'd taste that. The judge was in the room when it happened, and Steve says he was saying that Flynn committed out-and-out treason. Funny thing about that out-and-out treason is that it can be punished by out-and-out death. I'm surprised they didn't have to go to a brief recess just to give General Flynn a chance to change his shorts. Apparently, Jeanine Pirro was an object of derision and ridicule today. Nicole Wallace, formerly of the Reign of Error and the Bush maladministration, they took note of Jeanine Pirro, and, well, the results were cute.
The Flynn-Trump relationship seems to be the beating heart of the Mueller probe and the obstruction case. The decision to fire Comey over his refusal to let Flynn go really put in motion or accelerated the obstruction of justice. case, an investigation against the president. Why is Donald Trump, who's loyal to no one, he's not loyal to Rudy Giuliani, he gladly went along with his kids who sabotaged his Secretary of State campaign in the transition. He has thrown Chris Christie overboard more times than I can count. He's loyal to no one. But Flynn's different.
Yeah, Flynn has become a central figure for the president, has for a while. Remember, he's the one at the convention who infamously started the first lock her up chant about Hillary Clinton. He responded to the crowd, and he himself did it. He is someone who was a traveling partner of the president's, then candidate Trump's, in the final weeks and months. He was on the plane. We saw him every single day traveling with the president. These close ties were formed. As Bob just said, like these, they think of it as in a personal sense, not just a legal one. And his defense of it is an understatement to say it's highly unusual to wish him good luck today for his sentence. And today, in a very rare White House press briefing, it's the first one we've time from Sarah Sanders in, I believe, over a month, She proceeded to not walk back any of this praise.
Tell us about that. We have a policy of not airing those. What did she say? It was like the old-fashioned days, an oral telling.
It was very brief. It was only about 15 minutes.
What did we miss?
In terms of the Flynn's case, she was pressed about the proceedings today. She said that she felt like what transpired today was simply a courtroom proceeding that she didn't feel like she should weigh in. But she was asked about...
But then she did.
She did anyway. But she was asked about what we heard over the weekend from Fox News, from Judge Jeanine Pirro and others who have suggested the sort of conspiracy that Flynn was railroaded by the FBI agents, that he was pressed into this, that they feel like that would come out in court today and perhaps be an argument they could use against to undermine the Mueller probe. Of course, none of that did transpire today, despite Sarah in a morning interview suggesting that she again thought that Flynn had gotten a raw deal. But not only that, she still did not walk back any of the president's praise of Flynn, suggesting that it was appropriate for him to still consider him a good man because of the crimes that he's alleged committed did not have anything to do with him. Now, again, let's just step back for a second here. This is the National Security Advisor who today in court, the question was raised about whether he had committed treason. There was not an accusation, but it was a suggestion, like, should this be on the table? And even that, Sarah Huckabee Sanders in the White House did not distance himself from him at all.
Picking up on that, it's interesting, and it was a very... I'm going to push a little back on Frank as far as not a good day for Mueller. I understand his point as far as, okay, maybe the next witness is less likely to cooperate. In reality, Trump's whole strategy, you saw Jeanine Pirro, who after Giuliani and is probably his biggest...
I can't believe it. I have that. Words you've never heard on Deadline White House.
Yes,
should we watch Jeanine Pirro?
Let's watch the great Jeanine Pirro.
On Tuesdays, the parties will appear again before Judge Emmett Sullivan.
I'm just going to say at this point that this was what I was waiting for. The clip of Jeanine, and that voice... I mean, I can't do it justice, but this is Goddess of Irony work at master class levels.
A jurist unafraid of the swamp, a judge who has a track record of calling out prosecutorial misconduct, a man who does not tolerate injustice or abuse of power. Judge Sullivan can throw out this guilty plea if he concludes the FBI intentionally interfered with their target Flynn's constitutional right to counsel.
I will donate $500 to charity if that clip of Jeanine Pirro airs on Fox News and Friday.
Ladies and gentlemen, the comedy stars are Jeanine Pirro. She's playing the Tiki Room on Route 22.
To that point,
they were teeing up. If today he had not gotten any jail, in effect, what the anticipation was. If I'm Trump, if I'm messaging, I say, okay, we've been at this for 19 months. Papadopoulos got 2 weeks. There's no jail here. This is what we're going for. And to Jonathan's point, what will people be left from this is the word treason. The fact that that was even put out there, that the judge had any right to do it, he walked it back at the end, but he branded him that. And to me, the brand of the Mueller investigation took a big step forward, because Flynn was that guy out there. It's like, well, where does he really fit in? And he's going to walk away, and he's the NSA. And like, for that judge to come down that way and say, hey, buddy, is this treason? And counter that with Jeanine Pirro's tee-up, it was a very, very, very bad day for Team Trump.
To say the very least. Did you dress her up like this? No. Yes. Well, we did do the nose and the hat. Were you talking to the Russian ambassador when you didn't have any business doing that? No. Yes. Did you lie? No. Oh, I'm lying again. Yes. I guess I did. Mm-hmm. Huh. And thus the walls there around Donald Trump went and scooched a little bit closer together on all four sides. Because, of course, Michael Flynn has been interviewed and cooperated with the Mueller team something like 19 times so far. And he got a pretty clear message from the judge today that there better be some damn good answers. And by throwing it, and, you know, maybe we should, you know, from time to time, we consult the Constitution of the United States. Maybe we should just double back and check on what the framers said it was. Article 3, which incidentally is the section dealing with the judiciary, Section 3, because the judiciary would be in charge of determining charges of treason. Treason against the United States shall consist only in levying war against them or in adhering to their enemies, giving them aid and comfort. No person shall be convicted of treason unless on the testimony of two witnesses to the same overt act or on confession in open court. And that's kind of all rather significant. Oh, yes. Shall consist only in levying war against the United States or in adhering to the enemies, giving them aid and comfort. And that's where treason becomes problematic. And you know, that's a good point. Irish Dave points out, what I can't understand is, doesn't Mikey Flynn, disgraced ex-director of the Defense Intelligence Agency, realize the NSA has records of international phone calls, say, like from the Dominican Republic to some Russian carnivore, a system implemented by Federal Bureau of Investigation that was designed to monitor email and electronic communications, apparently replaced by commercial software such as Naris Insight? Yeah, you would think. But the question is, can the United States have an enemy without Congress declaring war? For instance, historically, in the years leading up to James Madison deciding to start a war with England, long about 1812, no state of war existed. But the British were using their navy as raiders on the high seas to impress American sailors from, say, whaling boats and merchantmen and things like that, into the British Navy, which was not something any of them particularly wanted. England was not we were not declared at war with England, but we were pretty clearly enemies. Now, I realize there are people out there who think that Big Bad Vladdy Daddy is just a cuddly and plush and lovable bare-chested, tiger-riding, benevolent father figure of Mother Russia. But when you consider the degree of, and Darlene, you know, pointed it out by email last night, that it's an act of war, what Russia did by meddling in our electoral system. And then, of course, no, we did nothing of sort. This was not us. Maybe, perhaps, China. Who knows? perhaps 400-pound child on bed in basement, like your noble genetic marvel, President Trump has said. With the cyber. Because, see, if you don't need a declaration of war, then, yeah, he walked it back, but what the judge said was true. How is that not treason? Could your client have been charged with treason? And whoo-wee, if he had been, well, then I think, Donald J. Trump may have spontaneously launched into orbit. Because if Flynn committed treason, it's fairly apparent that Trump did too. And maybe Pence. Interestingly, a report I saw earlier today indicated that when Donald Trump was announced to have actually won the presidential election, a day which will live in infamy, Mother Pence, well, Mike Pencilneck Geek turned to give her a kiss, and she responded, "You have what you want. Don't touch me." Mother Pence must not think much of Donald Trump. Interesting, that. But you don't necessarily, levying war against the United States, if you do things that aid in cyber war, which arguably what happened during 2015, 2016, it was, are you then giving them aid and comfort? I mean, it's not a particularly well defined fact pattern, simply because somebody can be at war without you being at war with them. The Third Reich declared war on the United States before the United States declared war on the Third Reich. Now, would someone cooperating with the Third Reich have been guilty of treason before we declared war back at them? So it was actually a pretty good question on the part of the judge, and I have a feeling that it probably did give Michael Flynn a more than a passing case of the turtle squirts. So let's run over 13 past the hour. And for those who weren't here at the very beginning of the program, the happy news, the holiday supply of 4 2-pound tins of Palmans are here. And Paul from Parts Unknown suggests a contribution of $50, and he'll mail the Palmans to you. There are four, not 5 or 6 or 8 or unlimited. There's only 4 tins available. They won't be there before Christmas, but they will be there before the new year, and they'll make wonderful New Year's Eve snacks. So if you've never had Palmans and you've always wanted to try some, but they were gone too fast in previous years, jump right in and you can have a tin. As Paul suggested, a minimum $50 contribution. Just trying to help us get out of the hole and do fun things like buy tires now for Christmas. Thank you, Paul. Thank you very, very kindly. And they're out there if you want them. And you want them, believe me. And by the time they're gone, you know, everybody will sit around and wait and then go, "Oh, well, I want some." And then once they're gone, it'll be like, well why, you know. So act now, as the saying goes. 14, no more time checks. See how deeply ingrained that is in the spirit of an old DJ. Let's run over to the stress line and see who we've got. Hey, welcome to the program.
Yeah, wheels for sale. I think you do have those things up for sale, my Lord.
Oh, God. Hey, Jim, how are you?
Okay. Just getting through the holidays and other things as well. And, of course, watching with great interest what would happen to, I thought he was a four-star general, but he's just a lieutenant general.
Yeah, what is that, three?
Yeah,
that's three.
Brigadier, major, lieutenant, that's the way it goes. General, you get four, but he really got his ass handed to him this afternoon, didn't he?
Well, I don't think he had what anybody would refer to as a good day, Jim, but let me ask you, because, you know, you've got a military background and you were an officer. When they're training you, do they take 15 minutes and say, oh, by the way, don't commit treason?
No, they don't. No, they do not.
It's sort of taken as read because, you know, duty, honor, country.
As read and understood and as sworn to.
Well, that was the part I was getting to, the swearing to part.
Yeah. I mean, once you raise your hand and you take that oath, boom, your world has changed as you know it.
But is it really that hard not to commit treason?
Is that hard not to commit? Is it hard not to commit treason?
Yeah, I mean...
there's some people now. Let me put them we... Now, this guy... what the hell was his name? He was doing this stuff for about 15 years. I made a movie about him with Ryan Philippe. It's called... Breached Hanson. Now, Hanson started by just walking into the Russian embassy and handed them some interesting papers that he thought they might have great interest in. And then they set him up with a contact man or somebody in which they, you know, began to establish the pickups and drop off and stuff like that. And that's the way he did it for 15 years or so. And I think that other guy in the Navy, whose whole family was involved in it, basically did the same thing. If you want to commit treason, you can walk right into the Soviet embassy or the Russian embassy. And as long as you got something they want to pay for, there it is. And there you have it, and you've done it. And even if you don't have anything they don't want to pay for, your action so doing is an action treason, because those were your intentions. That's the way it works. I mean, the best thing for you to do is to stay out of the Russian embassy unless you're invited there for a cocktail party or something like that.
Right, and it's an official function, and, let's don't do that.
Exactly. You don't go there officially. And, you know, you'd be amazed who's watching you, particularly if you're CIA or something like Hanson was. He was FBI. I mean, you know, they knew what he was doing.
You would think so, yes. Hold on, Jim. For some reason or another, the thing... just stand by. One of these days, we're going to figure out why this thing drops the Bluetooth. No, we probably won't. But you were there 1 minute, and then you weren't. So stand by, please. All right, there you are, Jim. Sorry about that.
That's okay. But it's a very easy thing to do if you really want to do it. And I can remember back in the 80s when I had called the Soviet consulate in Berlin to get some travel brochures. And when they finally came, that package was just ripped open and just sealed barely. I'm surprised he didn't fall out of the package. Well, they wanted to know what the hell was in those things. They really did. I mean, but this case with Flynn, you know, he was dealing with a Russian agent, an operative of the Russian government. And
well, I mean, the particular transaction in question, Jim, is him having a little tete-a-tete with the Russian ambassador to the United States. I mean, doesn't that about beat all? Hold on, we've lost the Bluetooth again. I got all kinds of fun little technical bedevilments going on here. Hang on a sec, Jim. All right, I think you're back this time.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, we just... No, he was talking to the Russian ambassador. I mean,
I mean, whether or not he received money for it or not, if he was talking about material that was classified, and was he not operating as an NSA chief?
Not in December of 2016, he wasn't.
Okay. Wasn't he at one time after he was Trump's National Security Administration person talking to the Russians as well?
I'm not real sure on that, but that's when he lied to the FBI.
Well, I think that's what Jay Sullivan mentioned this afternoon. He was just very upset about a man with his background and experience, and he would do something that was just absolutely disgusting. And I don't think that the good general expected to hear all that. And he did the very best thing. I mean, the judge basically is always doing, he could have sentenced him if he wanted to. But Bob, what good would he be as any kind of asset if you put him in jail?
I mean the whole idea was that the FBI would say we don't recommend jail time because he's been so helpful.
Well, but I mean, if they put him in jail and it seemed like the judge was about ready to, if not, he put up a damn good act. But the judge didn't, and he said, well, you know, let's not put this canary in a cage, but let him go and sing about wherever he might. And he could be a further worthy asset in bringing other people down.
Well, while the questions were posed, of course, to Flynn's counsel today, Jim, I don't think it was about Flynn. I freely acknowledge that I'm speculating here, but everything that he said, everything that he, the judge, said, sounded like it was for the benefit of the Trump regime, who has been out there hollering that somehow or another it was unfair or entrapment or dirty or improper for the FBI to even question Michael Flynn about his activities. And the problem is, Michael Flynn's activities extend far beyond the contact with the Russian ambassador to all of that business with Turkey. Remember, he was an unregistered agent of a foreign nation, and that foreign nation was Turkey.
I know.
So, with what the judge said today, I think that was for Donald Trump's benefit.
It could be, but I mean, did Turkey pay this guy any money?
Shit, yes. And two of his cronies just got indicted for the turkey business.
Okay, well, there you go. I think the good general had better be real cooperative from now on, because Judge Sullivan, what he has, Judge Sullivan obviously has no use for any of them. And whenever he can find enough evidence that he can put the door lock on the Gray Bar Hotel, and when they cease to be of any use to him, they're going to go away. And for a long time.
Well, and one of the things that probably pisses off Donald Trump the most is the fact that U.S. District Judge Emmett Sullivan is an African-American man.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, you know it does. Trump can't stand that. But Trump had better not stand it, or he
well,
better
and,
stand it.
And this will drive him even crazier. He had a long and distinguished career before going to the bench, but he went onto the bench for the Superior Court of District of Columbia in 1984, and then he went to the D.C. Court of Appeals in 1992 under George H.W. Bush, but then in 1994, Bill Clinton put him on the federal bench as a United States District Judge.
That's right, that's right. The man has quite a stellar judicial career.
And,
no question about it.
Right. But the fact that he's a Clinton appointee and black is going to absolutely driving Julius Geiser bananas.
I think anything is capable of doing that to him. With his current fake state. I want to ask you one more thing. It doesn't even relate to it, but what is all this stuff about Ivanka dyeing her hair blonde?
No, melanoma.
Well, that was melanoma?
Yeah. To look like Trump Ivanka. Right? Yeah. Mrs. Trump.
I haven't seen the pictures of her with dyed hair.
Oh, yeah. It's real. It happened in the last week or so. One day she's a brunette, and the next thing... she's kind of got this dirty streetwalker blonde thing going. And, you know, the obvious comparison is that she was trying to make herself look like Ivanka. Because Don likes blondes.
Oh, well. Truly, I can't imagine anybody wishing to divorce with him. But that's another time and another place. I'm going to let you go because I don't have anything more to say other than the fact that I was glad to see that judge kept him on tenterhook. And, you know, that general is going to give up a hell of a lot more than he has already because he knows more. And that judge knows it, too.
Exactly. And that's why I said, you know, I think you'd like for me to continue this so that you've got a chance to cooperate real good.
I love it. It's better than Nancy Pelosi saying, you better pray about this and let me go. You take care here.
Exactly.
All right. Good night. Good talking to you, sir.
Jim, you take care of yourself. We'll talk soon. Happy holidays.
Thank you.
Bye
you
now.
Too.
Bye. That's our buddy Jim calling from up Morgantown way. So I'm sorry, there appear to be some technical issues attendant upon HeadOn.live. People getting booted out of the chat and saying it's timed out and they can't get back in. Brother Deacon Asa is, I sent him a message and he's trying to sort it out. All right. So 1/10, and this is, you know, 1/10 of Paulman's is gone here at the halfway mark of the program. And that is, and it will be winging its way from parts unknown to Connecticut. Darlene will be snacking on Paulmans this holiday season, maybe New Year's-ish. And enjoy them. Enjoy them, Darlene. Now, just a quick note. You, I need a mailing address to send to Paul from Parts Unknown. So when you go to the interface, make sure you in the PayPal transaction, make sure you send me a note that gives me your mailing address. Darlene, I'll need that, please. I can dig and find it, but it would be a lot easier if it's just at the top so I can copy and paste to Paul from Parts Unknown. We are at the halfway mark of the program this Titanic Tuesday, and let's check in with Tracy. Hey, Tracy.
Hey, man. How you doing?
You know, it was a day.
Well, I heard about your tires. And who was it that did the gift of the Magi joke? That's just wrong.
Oh, that was Ron. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know, I'm going to get you. I'll get your tires for the car, but I'm going to steal the car so you don't need the tires.
Yeah, right.
What was it?
Yeah.
She cut her hair and so she could buy him. What did she? What was it? She cut her hair so she could buy him
a watch chain.
A watch chain.
Or a watch fob.
Watch so she could, he could buy her a comb for her hair.
Yeah, some combs. Yeah. Back when, you know, in the 19th century, when white ladies piled up their hair like, you know, the Tower of Babel and used, like, ivory combs to keep it in place instead, because they hadn't invented bobby pins yet.
They just slaughtered, you know, but just a whale to get that comb, but, you know, whatever. Or elephant or whatever, you know, no big deal. Because, you know, you gotta have those hair things on.
No, well, accessories are everything.
You know, you gotta accessorize.
So what's I got to know. So what's this about Operation Operation Sausage Rescue?
Operation
Sausage Rescue.
Rick called me this morning or this afternoon, so he didn't go in till late. So he is gonna come by my house after he gets off of work tonight, which will be about 9 o'clock or so my time, and he will be dropping off my sausage.
Wow.
Yes.
That is
so
cool.
I'm excited. I am very excited. So I'm finally gonna get to taste the much ballyhooed sausage.
And so, you will finally understand what all the ballyhoo is about.
Yeah, I'm just glad that I actually knew I can remember the word ballyhoo. I'm impressed.
So much winning.
Speaking of winning. So the wife went to the store today and got the standing rib roast.
Ooh.
And I tell you, $4.77 a pound.
You know, that ain't bad. That's real good for standing rib.
Yes, it is. And apparently the roast that she picked out was so big that they had to cut it in half, right? But the butcher's like, but you know what? It was only one per person. She's like, oh, okay. So my wife, being who she is, she went to the line with the first part of the roast, and, you know, paid for that, and then came back around and went to a different line and bought the other part of the roast.
And because you're going to do what?
Well, the thing is, we're having company. And so the roast that she saw was either too small or too big. Like I said, she cut one in half. So that made it effectively two roasts.
Ah, so okay, I got it, yeah. Now see, if you were to Christmas gift yourself with an Acorn smoker, you could roast one in the oven and smoke the other one.
You're killing me, man. You're killing me.
Well, I mean, I'm not saying.
I'm not saying, just saying. I need to. You know what? That'll probably be my birthday gift to myself next year. But Tell me about, what are you selling for 50, not selling, but gifting for $50?
Well, it has become a holiday tradition here at the Horn, Tracy. And I know you've heard about it in the past. Paul from...
That's what I'm saying. I have it. So I'm like, how did I miss it?
Well, this has been going on. This has been going on for several years now. Our buddy Paul from Parts Unknown literally peels individual almonds by hand and then roasts them with sea salt and extra virgin olive oil to create a tasty, crunchy holiday season snack that we have come to refer to as Paulmans.
Okay.
And there's only a few tins every year. In fact, there's more this year than ever before. There are four tins available. One is going to wing its way to Connecticut, and there's three more left.
And all I have to do is say I'm gonna pledge $50.
Yep, $50, and they're on their way.
Okay, count me in.
Okie dokie. So you have to make sure and send me a mailing address because Paul will handle the shipping.
I would do that. Not a problem.
And so they won't be there for Christmas, but they'll definitely be there by New Year's. And
they're not gonna be there for Christmas, and I don't want them.
Oh well, okay then. We're back to three. Yeah. And all I have to do is haunt the mailbox to make sure that Ferg doesn't find them first, and then I'll get to have some too.
I'm feeling kind of Scroogey this year about Christmas. I'm not really feeling Christmas this year. I don't know if it's still because of who's president or what's going on, and just the general tone of the country. You know, Sunday, as a matter of fact, Jan wanted to go Christmas tree shopping, and I'm like, okay. But I wound up going out with friends of ours, and I told you that we ripped up the carpet and we laid laminate on the, you know, hardwood laminate or whatever the fuck it is. So the house is a total hot mess. And every time I attempt to try to help, Jan just tells me to go away because she's kind of OCD. She's one of those people that whenever I clean, she comes behind me and does, you know, and cleans again. So in an effort to keep her from saying that I don't do anything around the house, I attempt to clean. I just kind of pick up the broom or whatever or the mop and just kind of pretend to clean. And then so I could say, well, I tried, you know. And then she still comes up behind me and does it anyway. So, you know, it gives me out. So Sunday, my friends and I went to this restaurant. And, you know, this whole thing about hipsters, Bob, you know I love food, okay? I'm not a small girl. I send pictures of my, you know, things that I cook.
Oh, yes.
Stuff like that. And I have no problems eating food. I'm kind of adventurous when it comes to food. Remember the braised chicken dish that I sent you?
Right, yeah. No, you're not. I don't think anybody would ever accuse you of being finicky.
Jen and Alex, you know, vetoed the goddamn olives. And I was like, I think that would have been amazing with the olives. But, you know, I was vetoed. So, you know, I like to try stuff. So we went to this restaurant called, Six and La Brea. It's a brewery. And so I'm looking at the menu first before I went to the restaurant. In the meantime, because Alex and Jen, you know, they're like, you go out, we'll stay straight at the house, and then we'll go Christmas tree shopping. And I had a big thumbs up on both counts. I'm like, y'all go for that. Anywho, we're looking at the menu before I go so I can kind of see. So I like to look at menus before I go to a new restaurant so I can say, you know, let me kind of get a lay of what's happening here, Bob. All this hipster bullshit. As Alex said, Mom, I really don't think I want to go to a restaurant where I have to Google everything on the menu.
Oh, does everything have funny names and you can't really dope it out by the descriptions?
And right, so you have to Google. I have to Google the entire menu, and I was just like, oh, this is not going to be good. I get to the restaurant, and still, I have never in my entire life gone to a restaurant where it took me 30 minutes to come to a decision as to what I was going to eat. And it wasn't because it was an expensive menu or anything like that. It was definitely not. That was not the case. There was just nothing on there that just jumped off of me and said, ooh, I gotta have it.
Oh, I thought maybe it was because they were pouring so much into the description of the food that that just reading it was like War and Peace.
That too. It wasn't overly descriptive. It was just, you know, for example, now KFC chicken, and I'm like, what is KFC chicken? Come to find out, they were Korean fried chicken. And what is Korean fried chicken, might you ask? It's spicy. And, you know, like I said, there was so much potential for it to be good.
I know. Korean fried chicken is an L.A. attempt to do Nashville-style fried chicken without saying Nashville.
Yes, probably.
Okay.
Probably.
Okay. Yeah. Well, we've got a new joint that's opened up, and I'm looking forward to trying it soon. But it's far more plebeian than anything that you were dealing with. We got a little joint now that offers a hand-dipped corn dog. You know, none of this nasty frozen, you know, weenie wrapped around with some nasty sweetened cornbread bullshit. This is dipped in beer batter and deep fried.
You know who has a mean hand-dipped corn dog? And you're going to scream. It's Disneyland, a California Adventure, and it's a hot link.
Oh, I would not be surprised at all to find that out. I mean, that usually carnivals and fairs and play and amusement parks are the last bastion of the great American corn dog.
Indeed.
But they've got themselves a big old like 800-pound meat smoker, so they're doing barbecue and stuff. It was the thing that jumped off the menu at me was the corn dog and the deviled eggs. So, you know, the deviled eggs may not speak to you because, well, that long-standing, yeah.
Well, shoot, I'm just cool with, you know, because it's like me and food. Food takes me to my happy place. Hold on a second, Bob.
Yeah. I was hearing an interesting little noise there. I wasn't sure if that was me or if that was Tracy. But, you know, at some point in time, you know, when I'm driving around again, I had to go to town, had to put some gas in the car and stuff once we got the donut on it, you know, that little limp-along spare. Oh, that thing, it was not fun to drive on. Okay, great. Yeah, you've driven around on a limp-along spare, haven't you, Tracy?
Oh, dude, I'm poor. Of course I have.
I hate that. I absolutely... I mean, get up to 40 miles an hour, and it feels like the whole car is going to come apart.
It's like it starts to wobble, and, you know, I mean, shit. I mean, look, you're talking to somebody that drove for months with expired tags because she didn't have the money to, you know, pay for to renew her registration, and finally got busted, but actually got busted by a cop that had a heart and just didn't give me a ticket for it.
Wow.
So I know these things. Yeah.
And
I think he's trying to look on my face. So I was just going to burst into that. I absolutely burst into tears. Like, oh, God. Because, you know, they could have told my, taken my car and towed it away.
Oh, no kidding. This was just a flat tire today. And the thing is, I had no, if I was more conscientious, I would walk around all four tires every time I get in it, you know, because that's what the obsessive compulsive guy does. But I didn't. And then I got out onto the road, out of the driveway, and I went, well, this doesn't seem right. And no, I was flat as a pancake. And then
the indicator came on.
And then the indicator came on.
like, seriously? You know, like, you know, when you, because I was listening, you know, at the China at the beginning of the show, and when you said talk about, you know, close, you know, shutting the barn door after the horse is gone, what at this point, you know, why are you just not telling me this? Because, you know, you think it had that indicator light come on a little sooner. I might have checked which tire was, you know, low on air or damn near flat.
Well, yeah.
Okay, 30 years.
But, you know, and I have to give kudos to Ferg because he happily came out and we he did most of the hard work of changing the tire for his old man. So that was mighty, mighty kind of him. And
I think you love having young. This is why I'm terrified for Alex to move out of the house.
I don't think terrified is the word, Tracy. Come on.
Okay, it's terrified.
No,
like, what am I
going
to do?
No, it's supremely inconvenienced.
Okay, but no. Okay, fine. No, terrifying. Because then that means I got to lift stuff that I can't lift and do all that heavy stuff that I can no longer do. And upset. And besides, he's my baby, so of course I'll be terrified.
Well, there, okay. That's all right. That's okay.
That's the whole thing. It's like, you know, he's my baby, so it's like, you know, I don't particularly want him to move out, but, you know, eventually he will. But, you know, it's not like I really want to. So I was reading that article. I love the Roots. I mean, it's like,
I'm getting a kick out of those links you sent me. There's some great writers over there.
Oh, my God. Aren't they great? And I just read their take on the whole Michael Flynn judge thing. So they actually did an article about that. While you were talking about it to Jim, just so happened that they had an article about that as well. But the writers, the things they come up with, and what's so hilarious is, you know, how you guys always thought maybe that I was exaggerating how black people feel about mayonnaise. But you read some of these articles and how they, you know, mayonnaise to flat. I mean, the way they attach mayonnaise to being supremely white and horrible. the things that they use to, I forget what they use to, Tommy Lauren and mayonnaise and even Ann Coulter. I mean, it's just, black people don't like mayonnaise.
I've gathered as much. This has been a huge cultural eye opener for me.
Like I said, I was just so glad to share some of those articles with you, so you can say, "Well, damn, I thought Tracy was just, you know, a little exaggerating."
No, it's a thing. It's a real thing. I get it. Yep.
It's a real, real thing. So yeah, no, but it's refreshing to read. Of politics and culture through a black lens, because, you know, everything that I get, you know, is, you know, CNN or whatever, or Huffington Post and stuff like that, and, you know, pretty, you know, still in Washington Post and all that, you know, still good writing, but, you know, to have that, you know, that people say to put some stank on it.
Yep.
It's just, you know, the only way that, you know, the way that only black people can truly appreciate, and white people can say, man, just make this shit look a lot, really a lot more interesting. But it's just, you know, like I was reading, I sent you the link earlier about the whole Russian, you know, the Ivan bots, you know, targeting black people. And I'm like, I didn't even think they thought we were important enough to even care.
Yeah, isn't that infuriating, though, Tracy? Because
it just pisses me off. Oh my God!
But then all of a sudden, it makes sense, doesn't it? When you think about you remember? I'm almost sure you were listening a few weeks ago when the League of the South, you know, bunch of racist ass Klan simps and Confederate play actors, when they declared
Abrams and the Magical Negro.
Well, no, when they declared that they were going to do outreach to our comrades in Russia who really aren't that different from us.
No, I missed that.
Oh, well, you probably want to look that up because, you know what, maybe they were right. Maybe Mother Russia isn't all that different from your average Southern racist, because that was clearly racist behavior on the part of lovable Vlad.
Yes. But to realize just how deep-seated and, you know, seated racism is in this country, that they pulled the okey-doke, you know, on a whole bunch of black people, these woke, so-called woke Negroes, and they couldn't see, the forest and the trees about the whole the hate mongering that these people have for Hillary Clinton. And somebody made a comment in the comment section of the article talking about a lot of these millennials that they've known nothing about Hillary Clinton, other than what they've heard over the last 20 or so years, and that's all they've ever heard about her. I know a lot about Hillary Clinton, and I heard her say super predators. I heard her talk about the crime bill and stuff like that. So, I mean, the bitch is not absolved from what she said or what she did. However, they use this stuff to get into the minds of black folks, especially millennials, that consider themselves woke, and it's like, well, we're not going to vote for somebody who talk like that about black people and stuff like that, or we're going to vote either, it says, don't vote for Hillary, either vote for Jill Stein or stay home. And it worked. They said that black votership was down for the first time in 20, this is the first election in a while that black votership was very low.
Yeah, it worked. It worked.
Because I think I told you it was last Christmas, and I got into it with a millennial who went on and on about, the diatribe about Hillary Clinton and Bernie Sanders, and you should have voted for Bernie, and Bernie should have been this, and, and that's why I didn't vote, and I just sat there and looked at it, and I'm like,
I know. Yeah, I know. You're right. She made the super predators comment, but almost everything, and we talked about it here. And she has a profound gift. I mean, if Trump's has a gift for saying mean, stupid things, Hillary has a gift for sticking her foot in her mouth too.
Oh, God, yeah.
Like when she said...
on the campaign trail and how I don't feel no way tired. I'm like, bitch, no.
I remember when she said that she knew how to deal with men who got off the plantation.
I know it's a reservation.
I thought, okay, maybe it was, but... either.
No, it's a reservation.
Who go off the reservation. And that's... That's a phrase that carries genocidal freight. I mean, I don't know if people realize this, but General Philip Sheridan, during the so-called Indian Wars, went onto a reservation and massacred every last man, woman, and child of a tribe when they were in winter camp, and they were obeying the rules. But he was making an example of those who for those who went off the reservation.
Mm-hmm.
I don't doubt that they did use that, and I don't doubt that they did use it to great effect. It's a damn shame, though, Tracy, that it was there to be used.
And this is the problem. because, like I said, the fact that they took, you know, the already entrenched racism in this country and the Hillary hatred, and it's like they did a study on the shit. I mean, that's some deep probing shit that they knew exactly what pressure points to push. I mean, it was like it was sheer genius. It was evil genius, and and what's so sad is the fact that we know this happened, and you know, and nothing is being done to the Russians, and because you know, what's his name is saying, oh, I asked Putin, and he said he didn't do it. Just like you asked the Saudi prince, did she kill the reporter? Oh no, he didn't do it. So okay, that's okay.
Oh, you mean Mohammed? You mean Mohammed bin Slice and Dice?
Yes, Mohammed bin Slice and Dice. Who came up with that? Who was that?
I've been trying to remember, but that's good. But again, you know, again, this is another one of those good moments, Tracy, when we can say, hey, it's not just a Donald Trump problem, because I remember when Dim Leader during the Reign of Error said, hey, I looked into Putin's soul. Here's a man here I can work with.
I looked into his soul. He doesn't have a soul.
Yeah, unreconstructed KGB lieutenant colonels are not known for their moral freaking compasses.
No. It's like, remember when I was, the gentleman that I picked up yesterday, the customer I told you about that we were talking, and one of the things that he brought up was the whole Russian interference in our election, and he's like, the fact that this person that claims to be the president of the United States is doing absolutely nothing to defend our country against more cyber attacks by the Russians is he said, like you said, it's treason because it's war. It is a cyber war. They have Russia declare war on this country when they infiltrated and screwed with our election. And nothing's being done about it. Because, you know, like you said, Daddy Vladdy is just a sweet, thick, huggable, you know, bear of a guy that, you know, he just likes us a whole lot and everything is going to be fucking okay. It just boggles the mind that people are just that. I mean, yet we are surrounded by a bunch of simpering idiots. I'm sorry,
Well, no, what I'm hoping is that there is a lesson to be taken away from all of this going forward, and maybe there is, based upon some turnout numbers that we saw out of this latest election cycle, especially in a place like Alabama with Doug Jones, is that when this shit starts up in 2020, that people will take a much harder look at the information they're receiving. Because probably the most disturbing problem out of all of this is that there's no sign that they're letting up. I mean, did you catch the story where they've been attacking Mueller?
Yeah, didn't they, about these women that were coming forward and with sexual misconduct allegations and stuff like that?
Not just that, but, you know, general allegations of corruption and highlighting controversial moments, that sort of thing.
Oh, Jesus. I know you don't watch, this is one of those instances of fiction imitating life or whatever, you know, ripped from the headlines, but last week or the week before, I know you don't watch Madam Secretary, but the story arc on that particular episode was about Russia meddling. And I forget which two countries. It was Serbia. Who was Serbia warring with? I'm so bad with these kind of things.
I'm sorry, I lost you there.
Serbia.
You mean the back in the 90s?
Yeah,
That was the Kosovo campaign.
Okay, okay. So,
but they also warred with the Croats and the Bosnia Herzegovinans.
Okay. Well, there was this particular episode. I think it was the Serbs and the Kosovo. And two of those countries. You know, I'm sorry. I'm terrible with these things. They were coming. I don't think not only was that they were trying to get into the UN or whatever it was. They had brokered a peace, and they were about to, you know, let each other, you know, work into NATO or UN, whatever the case may be. But then all these stories started to break about, you know, mass graves being unearthed and all sorts of stuff, right? Come to find out, it was Russian meddling.
And all we can do is try to be aware of it. And, I mean.
But the good news about this, you know, because it's television, and of course, you know, of course, at that, the United States did something about it. And I forget if they blew up, or they didn't blow up anything. It was one of these places where there's a bunch of Russians, you know, doing the, you know, making comments and sitting out the state news and all that. So they found out where they were, and they short-circuited their servers and the computers and stuff, and then they arrested all of them. And it's like, you know, at least the government, is, you know, in this fictional government, acknowledged and said we must do something about this, whereas in the real life, you know, our government isn't doing shit because, you know, nothing happened because, you know, Putin said nothing happened. There's no there. It is just crazy. But like I said, you know, like I told you about the guy yesterday. Wasn't that an amazing story about the guy that I picked up who I was sure was a rich white Republican, and he turned out to be a really cool, down to earth, progressive. I mean, he was. I have never heard a white man rail against shit other than like you. I mean, it was just all because between him and you that he has money. But he was talking about how the Republicans are not going to be happy until they annihilate the poor, that voter suppression was criminal, that, you know, the things that are happening in this country is just. It's like this is not the country that it should be, and on and on and on. But then, the best part is when he told me about former attorney that he fired him because he was just a vile, disgusting person, and just to be in the same room with him is like needing to take a bleach shower.
That he does sound like me.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
I mean, right down to the shower with bleach. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it was just like I'm like, oh, there's other people like Bob. There is hope yet for this country. It's, you know, but you know, it was just I love having these conversations with people. Because it's just it makes me feel like I'm not alone. Because sometimes I think it's still kind of lonely sometimes for us because it's like, you know, we have each other, we have our community, but, you know, and our Facebook friends and, you know, and family and whatnot and so forth that, you know, that think, you know, that are in the same, pretty much same mindset that, you know, we all are in. But then, you know, that's us in a bubble because outside of the bubble is everything else. It's Michael Flynn, and it's, you know, Cohen, and Sarah Huckabee. Oh, speaking of Sarah Huckabee, isn't she going to be leaving at the end of the year, too?
That's the rumor, yes.
So, at this point now, the hardest jobs to fill right now, coming into the end of 2018, she's a staff. And probably, you know, press secretary, host for the Academy Awards, and now Super Bowl performer.
Well, but don't forget Office of Management and Budget, because Mick Mulvaney,
okay,
who said Donald Trump was a terrible, horrible person.
Oh, yes. Wasn't that priceless?
Yeah. Well, he was at Office of Management and Budget. And he's not going to stop being OMB director. It's just that the day-to-day stuff will be done by his second in command while he's over being sort of a temporary part-time chief of staff. I mean, the wheels really, I got wheels on the mind, I guess, are really kind of wobbling with this bunch.
It's like, who's running the asylum?
Well, one person was interviewed and asked to remain anonymous, but said that if they were to take the chief of staff job, they'd need an extra $500,000 just for the legal bills.
The legal, exactly. Because, like, you know, you got to think about the fact that if you become his chief of staff, what are your chances of being indicted for something?
Well, or simply having to lawyer up to keep from it.
Right. Who wants that stress?
If it was just a good president who was beset by vicious partisans, yeah, okay. You'll notice, for instance, that Bill Clinton didn't have any problems getting people to work for him.
Barack Obama didn't have any problems getting people to work for him, did he?
No, and they weren't all indicted all over the place either. But in the case of the Trump administration, Tracy, you're not working for a guy who has, and you know it, who has the best interests of the country at heart. You're working for a guy who will throw you under the bus in a New York second, and thinks only of himself. So why take it? Why would you put up with it? It's kind of like a story that came out earlier today, over at the New Civil Rights Movement. A trans woman went to a Christmas party. Her name is Charlotte Clymer. She's a veteran of the U.S. Army. She's a writer with the Human Rights Campaign. And she's a trans woman. And she came back from her holiday party just kind of on fire. She sent out 16 tweets. She said last night, and again, this goes back to who would work for Donald Trump. Last night I was at a Christmas party and this nice gentleman struck up a conversation with me, asked what I do. I told him. He said he works in the Trump administration. He then says, I vote Republican, but I'm socially liberal. Then she adds, let's discuss this for a second. I get that there are folks in D.C. who work in the Trump administration who don't support Trump but want to serve our country capably. I recognize that nuance. I also get that there are some conservatives who don't support Trump at all and will walk the walk on social equality. But this gentleman put to me that A, he's a Republican, B, works in the administration, and C, regrettably votes for the GOP, but wants me to know that he's on my side. That is a summary of the first 90 seconds of our conversation, she continued. And I got the sense he wanted me, a trans woman, to absolve him. I didn't percolate this subject. I didn't inflate a conversation with him. I didn't initiate a conversation with him. He drove this thing and then launched into the apologetics around voting for the GOP. So I'm just going to put this out there to other folks who feel guilty about supporting the Republican Party but call themselves socially liberal, because you folks really need to hear this. If you support a party that's anti-LGBTQ and anti-woman and xenophobic and white supremacist because you think your taxes are too high, you are not socially liberal. If you support a party led by a coward who defends kidnapping children away from their parents and locking them in oversized dog kennels, you are not socially liberal. If you have a friend or a relative who's LGBTQ, whom you love and with whom you get along, but you support a party that openly and viciously calls for discrimination against LGBTQ people, you are not socially liberal. If you love watching Queer Eye and RuPaul's Drag Race, but you support a party that says trans people should be banned from the military and LGBTQ children should suffer the abuse of conversion therapy, you are not socially liberal. And that ain't the end of it. But it gives a pretty good idea. It gives a pretty good idea of where she was coming from. And
exactly.
And you know, no. That's a fig leaf that will not cover up what you're trying to cover up.
It's like, I go on about my brother-in-law. Basically, it's the same thing. And I'm like, you do realize that you're married to a black woman. You do realize that your sister-in-law is a lesbian. You do realize that you have black brother-in-law, black men that are you are now related to through marriage. And yet, you voted and still support this creature, I can't even say anything. I can't even come up with the words. So, like this woman said, you cannot call yourself socially liberal. You cannot. I'm not going to absolve you of your sin. You know, you're okay, and you know, I wouldn't dare say anything bad against the trans community and all that. I don't feel that way. I don't think that way. But yet, and still, you get a vote for somebody who does. And you support a party who does. So I have a problem with you. I cannot, and anybody, like, you know, I meant to send this to you. I probably will never be able to find it again. But Christine, how do you say her last name?
Christiana Monpour?
Her, yes.
Okay.
She interviewed Dave Chappelle and Jon Stewart. I guess they're touring together. This was a couple of months ago. And they showed a clip of Dave Chappelle. He hosted SNL the Saturday after the election. And he's like, you know, I'm going to give this man a chance, but I'm asking him to give us and people who are, you know, people who are marginalized and whatnot and so forth a chance as well. And so that was, you know, decided at the election, after the election of November of 2016. And so she asked Dave Chappelle, so I forget how he said it, but, you know, being Dave Chappelle, he's like, you know, without saying, fuck no. I'm not giving him any more chances or anybody that supported him any more chances at this point. Because in who he is. He does not care about anybody who does not look like him, who does not have a dick and does not have seven figure money. He doesn't care. So if you do not fall within those rights, you are useless and worthless to him. So it's like, no, we tried to give him a chance. Let me back that up. I wasn't going to give the motherfucker a chance because I knew who he was. I knew who he was when he called Mexicans rapists and murderers, you know, the very worst people. That filled his face with me. So I was like, I was already done. And then as he was going on and on about grabbing women by their private parts and all that other stuff, and just his general persona, just who he was, just the look of disdain that he has on his face when he has to talk to other people, right? Or when people call him out on his shit, just who he is. I wasn't going to give him a chance. You know, I told somebody, oh, you just need to give him a chance. And my response was, I'm going to give him as much of a chance as you gave Obama. How about that?
Yeah, so this is the part where Todd would ordinarily say, just give it. Yeah, I don't know why. Why don't you just give him a chance?
Todd just sent me a text. You don't care.
Yeah. Hey, you know what? One other thing, little Los Angeles news. You've got a couple of members of Congress to be proud of.
Oh, I do?
Yep. Representative Nanette Berrigan and Representative Jimmy Gomez. They went down to the border to check on issues and conditions for people seeking asylum at the Otay Mesa Port of Entry near San Diego.
Really?
And they asked questions like, why can't you get these people processed? And the Border Patrol assholes said, well, we've got capacity issues. And these two members of Congress said, okay, could you show us some proof of that? And of course, they didn't. Nanette Berrigan tweeted, CBP female officers sitting here as part of their shift on the job talking about how migrant refugees seeking asylum as criminals and how bad they are, and then we wonder why asylum seekers are not treated with dignity and respect. It makes me sick. Still here at midnight. And eventually, the two members of Congress were put in cages along with about 13 other advocates down there and the immigrants.
Excuse me, what? Two members of Congress? They put two members of Congress in cages?
Yes.
Was this on purpose or just... Was this on purpose?
Yes. Families belong together. The organization they were there supporting said, update, CBP built a cage around us and has kept us in it the entire night. We've been here with Representative Berrigan and Representative Gomez and six asylum seekers for 15 hours.
They put two members of Congress. So they effectively jailed two members of Congress.
Yes.
Without due process.
Yes.
I mean, I'm not a legal scholar or anything, but I've watched enough Law and Order to know. I'm like, wait a minute. That don't sound right. That don't pass the smell test.
And I'm guessing I'm probably mispronouncing the one congresswoman's name. I said Berrigan as if she was maybe one of those 10,000. As if she was maybe Irish or something.
Yeah.
I'm guessing it's Barragan.
It's Pat Barragan.
And Gomez, Representative Gomez.
What districts do they represent?
I don't see it right. Let me see. I'm clicking now. 44th Congressional District for Barragan.
44th and where? Because I'm not up on the districts.
And
that's what drives me crazy when they talk about,
And Gomez is California 34. And it's really kind of hard to tell otherwise. Let's see. Congresswoman Barragan shows a picture of container ships entering the port of Los Angeles, so I'm guessing it has something to do with that.
I'm sorry, I lost you. I heard Los Angeles, and that was the first thing.
Yeah,
what did you say?
I guess the 44th has something to do with maybe the port of Los Angeles area.
Oh, that would be San Pedro, Long Beach, Wilmington.
And then Representative Gomez's Twitter picture is looking toward eastward toward Los Angeles or whatever from the hills. So.
Okay. Well, good for them. So these people have been jailed. They're United States representatives. What's going to happen to the people that threw them in jail?
Nothing. Well, I mean, nothing yet. They were routinely subjected to, being given a hard time by the CBP agents, and snide comments and jokes were made about the asylum seekers. And then by late yesterday evening, most of the 15 asylum seekers had been taken in for processing.
Well, one does never see.
Six of the 15 were the Honduran mother and her five children who were photographed being tear gassed.
And see, right here, you know, just what you just, you know, the Honduran mother with her children who were being tear gassed. And again, I cannot support, and I cannot even be in the same room with anybody that still supports this man. You're tear gassing human beings because they're running away. They're literally running for their lives, and they're trying to come somewhere so they can, they're trying to get somewhere so they can be safe with their children. So their children have a chance. You know, their 5, 6, and 7 year olds have a chance to become 6, 7, and 8 year olds. Nine-year-olds and whatnot,
right,
and so forth.
I'm trying to think of who it was that said to me perhaps last night that based on the theory that Jacqueline Call, that her daddy was at fault for bringing her with him in a desperate flight to America to save her life, under that kind of thinking, Anne Frank's death was the fault of Anne Frank's daddy for sending her up into that attic.
To that attic. Uh-huh. Hadn't sent to that attic, she would have been just okay. She knew, you know, the danger of going into the attic, but you did it anyway. It is just. So let's see, what can we do? On a happy note,
yes.
I am making. I think I told you about it. My chicken tortilla soup again was cooking.
Oh yeah, yeah. Hey, I got one question for you before we have to go. Are you going?
Uh-huh.
So are you gonna? There's no mayonnaise involved. Are you gonna get brave and make some Yorkshire pudding with your standing rib? Because people will love you forever if you do.
Okay. Now is Yorkshire pudding kind of like a souffle thing?
Yeah, it puffs up real pretty. Yeah. Eggs, milk, flour, water.
And no mayonnaise.
No mayonnaise. Nope. No mayonnaise. But
Does it sound particularly. I've seen Yorkshire pudding. Like I said, I know it was a bready, puffy thing.
It's rich.
Maybe I'll try it.
Is it
rich?
Yeah, and it goes perfect with standing rib roast.
Well, I will be making horseradish sauce from scratch.
Without a doubt, you got to.
You have to. And there will be scalloped potatoes.
Ooh, yummy.
And roasted. Now, again, the gentleman that I, because I was, we were going back and forth with what's going to be made for, Christmas dinner. And I told him I wanted to do roasted Brussels sprouts. And he's like, he's like, well, how do you prepare yours? I'm like, I half them and then I toss them with olive oil and sea salt and roast them. He's like, try this. He's like, fry up some bacon.
Well, that's a winning beginning.
Cut up, half the Brussels sprouts and cook them in the bacon grease for a little while and then roast them.
Ooh, yeah.
And then sprinkle bacon,
And see, that's the key to the Yorkshire pudding. You've got to save your fat drippings from roasting the standing rib.
Speaking of standing rib, what is it? Before I forget, you devil bone. What the hell?
Devil bone? Yeah, you roast it with the bone on, and then when it's rested and everything, you cut the bone off so you can slice the rib, and you set the rib bones aside till the next day. And
mm-hmm.
you roast them under the broiler, and you paint them with a mixture of, mustard powder and Dijon mustard and a little bit of half and half. And I usually crush up some capers in it and just paint it with that and then pull it out and play cavewoman with it. You just kind of yank it.
like you would do at a Renaissance fair.
And they are so good.
I'm going to have to remember that because I'm excited. I mean, I'm not a huge, you know, I'm not a huge beef person. I mean, I, you know, every so often I like a good, I think, did I send you a picture of about a month back of that ribeye?
Yeah, oh, that was.
That I seared in the, I didn't tell you. Mama got a new pot, a new pan.
Oh, yes?
It's Martha Stewart cast iron enamel pan. Skillet.
Oh, that's like Le Creuset.
Yeah, but I got it for $29 on sale at Macy's.
Oh, bring it. Yeah.
And it's my favorite, and it's red. As a matter of fact, the braised chicken that I did,
yeah,
that recipe came in with the pan. And so it was great because, you know, you fry the chicken, meat skin side down. And then after the chicken is cooked, you add the broth and the garlic and you cook the potatoes. And then you add the rosemary and all that. And then you let that cook for a little while. And then with the lemon juice, the lemon quarters and stuff, wedges, and then you roast it. And Jan was just, she's like, you could put that in the oven. I said, honey, this is why I bought it, because I'm trying to do simpler dishes, skillet dinners. So I have two skillets that I can put in, goes from stove to oven. The Martha Stewart one, and then it's another one. I forget the manufacturer, but it's an Italian manufacturer. And that skillet is the one, that just has the handles on it, the short handles, not the long handles that you have on the regular skillet.
Right, like you reach in with mitts and get it on the handles on either side.
Right. And so this one, that other one isn't cast iron, but it's a really good skillet. And it has, it's a deeper skillet, and it has a lid to it as well that I can put. You could put in the oven along with my my Dutch oven that I got Macy's that I got on sale. So I have, I'm slowly building my arsenal of cooking utensils, cooking implements, because it's like cooking makes, that's one of the things. When I fall into my debilitating depression, one of the things that does bring me out of it is when I cook.
Yeah.
And I actually found a cook guy the other day. I was at the mall, one of these is in Century City, and they have this, I guess Amazon is starting to open like bookstore now.
No, brick and mortar?
Yeah. So they have, and, so I was walking by the Amazon store, and they had this book there, One and Done. And it's a cookbook specifically for air fryers, Dutch ovens, skillets, and cooking on the cookie sheet. So it's a cookbook. Specifically for those kind of, and I have all that stuff. I have an air fryer, and a pressure cooker. So it's for pressure cookers, air fryers, one skillet meals, and cooking on the cookie sheets. So I'm kind of really excited because I tell you how my wife is very persnickety, so it's sometimes very difficult for me to find stuff that she'll actually eat. But I handed her the cookbook the other day when it came in the mail, and I'm like, look in it and get the stickies and highlight and put them where on the recipes that you think you'll like. So wish me luck.
Oh, indeed.
I'm just sorry. I know you got to go because I'm pretty sure there's other people that want to get in onto the conversation.
Well, but, we will talk further about Yorkshire pudding. You will be amazed. If you've got a popover tin, that's perfect, but you can also use like that heavy skillet or an iron skillet, because the trick is to get that beef, those beef drippings, not the, you know, the fat, not the other stuff, but you got to get them smoking hot at about a 450 degree oven. When the grease starts to smoke, you pour the batter in, it goes woof, and you bake it for 20 minutes. And it will be the first thing gone off your table.
And so, do I still make the yeast rolls?
Why not? Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, you gotta have yeast rolls. I mean, I cheat. I buy them from the, you know, out the freezer and let them rise. But still.
Yeah, you make your brown gravy with your pan de glaze from the beef roast and with the Yorkshire. Oh, you'll cry. It's
okay. Well, when I get home, I will Google Yorkshire pudding and start playing with it and see, you know.
Well, one thing your recipes may not tell you that I will. Everything you're going to use in the Yorkshire pudding, whatever the recipe is, it calls for milk. Have the milk setting out and coming to room temperature. Have the eggs at room temperature. Have the water at room temperature. Everything at room temperature.
Oh, my God. Who did I just talk to about that? Oh, my God. Wait a second. Was that today? Oh, God, I have the memory and the retention of a special needs nap. But, my friend Perry. He was talking about that because I was talking about making a pound cake as well. You know, I was either going to do a pound cake or a lemon meringue pie.
Big old pound cake soaked in rum. Yeah.
Yeah. And I got the rum from the Caribbean.
I think the decision's been made, Tracy. Well, and remember, it won't be there for Christmas dinner, but come New Year's, you'll have to offer up a report on the Palmans, because they have never been anything but wonderful. So quick as you're off the air, message me with your mailing address so I can send that on to Paul.
I will do it when I get home, because we have been talking while I've been stuck in traffic, and I should have been home by now, but I'm nowhere near home. So you just kept me calm for the last however long we've been talking.
Bad night on the 9 and 15 16ths.
Yeah, I'm on the 101, and I was when we started the conversation, I was in Newberry Park chilling, and then I started my way home, and I really should have been home. In the time that we first started talking to now, I should have been home, but I'm nowhere near home, so it's no big deal. The good news is that at home I have waiting chicken tortilla soup. The only thing I have to do is, you know, cut up the tortillas and fry them for the tortilla strips and the avocado, cut up some avocado and slice some lime.
Oh, yeah, that'll be right.
I'll be fine. And I'm just mad at myself that I didn't buy beer. One last thing.
You got to go, but I found something amazing. I may have mentioned it. I was over at the Ben Franklin. And I found, you know, from one of those Amish food companies, I found cherry hot and spicy salsa.
Ooh.
With real hunks of cherry in it and lots of chili pepper fire and the tomatoes and everything. It may be the best I've ever had.
Well, I was toying around. Like last night, I sent you the picture of what I had for dinner last night.
Yeah.
What I forgot to send you a picture of was the mango with sticky rice.
Oh, now see, I could get worked up about that.
Have you ever had it?
Yes. Yes,
ooh.
I have.
Mango with sticky rice. I mean, these are the things. This is why I never lose weight. But we have to have our drugs where we can. And since, you know, food is my drug of choice, unfortunately. And since it's not illegal to eat, you know, that's why we have, you know, that's why I'm the size of my
enjoy. All you can do, just enjoy. That's all. That's all
I'm going to do. So when I get home, do me a favor, because, you know, like I said, the retention of a special needs mat, please text me to tell, to remind me to not only send the donation, but for my address, because, as a matter of fact, I forgot. Rick and I spoke hours ago, and I was supposed to send him my address so he could get to my house. Have I done it yet? No, because I keep forgetting.
And because I've kept you on the phone, so.
No. It has nothing to do with that. It has absolutely nothing to do with you keeping me on the phone. It's like I said. Thank you. It has nothing to do with that. It's just that, it, you know, and all kidding aside, I get really nervous because I don't know if I ever told you guys, but my grandmother had early onset Alzheimer's. So when I have issues with my memory, I get a little freak out.
The chat room is telling you to drive carefully. And by the way, we've had an update. Melanoma, Ron, I think it was Ron told me, melanoma went back from Streetwalker Blonde to, not Streetwalker Blonde, but she went back to her brunette sort of, yeah.
I wonder what made her do that, because she probably, the Twitterverse probably went ape shit over that.
It did.
I don't feel bad for her because I think she's a reprehensible human being because she jumped on the bandwagon with her husband. So I don't give a damn. And also, she knew who she was marrying, and she cheat. You know, can't be.
She went on TV and entirely adopted his racist birther bullshit. So give her a hood to wear too, as far as I'm concerned.
And so I don't feel the least bit sorry for her, but you gotta go, Jesus, what kind of, because this is part of me who I can, because Ivanka was, the only thing she, not Ivanka, oops, melanoma, the only thing she signed up was to live in the penthouse and shoot out a kid. She didn't, I'm pretty sure she was not happy. Not only, you know, when he decided to run for president, she's probably hoping that he wouldn't win, and then he won, and she's like, son of a bitch.
Right. It's like Mother Pence telling Mike not to touch her after it was announced that Trump had won.
Did that really happen?
No, I did not. I don't make stuff up here. I share reports that I've read. I think it was from. I think it was from maybe, well, I don't remember, but it might have been from like Vanity Fair or something like that. But yeah. Anyway, we'll roll on, let you get out of traffic, and we'll see if we're going to finish off the Palmans tonight or if we have to finish them off tomorrow. Tracy, it's been a joyful conversation. It always is.
Well, you take care, and I can't wait to hear who's coming on and talking next.
All right. Bye now.
Bye.
Yeah, the one and only Tracy, the lady cab driver down in on the 101. Yes, the 101. It is 20. Time check. No more of those. But we got about 23 minutes of opportunities left. There's only two tins of Palmans remaining. Tracy's getting one. Darlene's getting one. If you want one of the remaining two, then you better chime in, because I will get notes overnight. From a couple of folks saying they want the Palmans. So basically, remember, it's a $50 contribution. That was the price. That was the standard that Paul set. And then you send me, make sure you give me a memo with your address in it, and I will send it along to Paul. Paul will send them to you, and you'll have a wonderful snack for New Year's Eve. Okie doke. Okie doke. Let's see here. Let's run over to the stress line and see what's going on. Hey, welcome to the program.
Yo, Bob, it's me again, Reggie from Decatur, Georgia, man.
Yeah, what's happening, Reggie?
Speaking of Melania, or melanoma, as you prefer to call her, how or what exactly do you think about or feel about her interview with Sean Hannity, about her being the most picked on, unfairly picked on, mistreated first lady that we've ever had within our lifetimes,
well,
in our history?
You know, that just goes to show how little perception she has of her predecessors.
Right.
Because like, I don't recall anybody depicting melanoma as Angela Davis with a machine gun in her hands, or depicting her as an ape. And there haven't been any left-wing talkers out there claiming that she's actually a man.
Right.
You know, if she's picked on or whatever, it's over things that are factual. And the fact is, she is the first wife of an American president ever to remove her clothing for perfect strangers to view her naked body in exchange for money.
She might have been a porn star then.
Well, no, she was modeling. She was modeling.
Right. They always say that. But like I said, she should have been a porn star if she was going to get naked
just like Karen McDougal is referred to as a Playboy model.
Well, they should have been porn stars doing a lesbian movie together then. If they wanted to strip up naked out in front of people, they do that too, you know. Have sex in front of people. I mean, and outside of straight men like myself, well, like ourselves, such as ourselves, as lesbian women fantasizing about having sex with both of them, why do they think that we're up all night, waking up in deep cold sweats, screaming about, obsessing about her, screaming out her name, you know what I mean?
Well,
why does she think people, you know what I mean? Outside of fantasizing about having sex with her, you know, sexual fantasies, we all have those, right? Outside of that,
talk about a lot of things on this program, but individual sexual fantasies, I think we've managed to steer clear of.
Yes.
And it's probably a good policy that we continue to do that.
Yes, but you know, outside of that, why does she think people are obsessed about her every day and night? You know, we do have lives and more important things to worry about and be concerned with and to do, don't we, Bob?
It's a little bit tawdry. But, it's a little bit tawdry of me to mention her too. But then again, she is his wife.
Yeah, she put herself out there. I thought she was behind the scenes.
Yeah, she's part and parcel of, and you know, it was later admitted that when she wore that stupid jacket, I really don't care. Do you? That really was a jab at people covering her. As far as I can tell, I mean, you know, maybe I'm sure she knows which fork to use with the shrimp and which little fork to use with the oysters, but that's really not my benchmark for being a decent human being. And the thing has happened with the Bluetooth again. Hang on, Reggie. Just a sec. The call. I don't know if it's the gizmo box or the phone. And it's kind of hard to test otherwise. Well, anyway, you're back, Reggie. Go ahead.
Okay, I was saying that I hope that blonde hair color that she took out of her hair recently didn't alter her brains any, you know? Didn't seep into her brains any, you know what I mean?
Make
her more stupid than she already is. And I thought she was supposed to be one of these behind the scenes first lady president. She didn't crave for the spotlight or the attention. She wasn't an attention fame whore like her husband is. I thought she prided herself on that. What happened?
Your guess is as good as mine, Reggie. Your guess is as good as mine.
I mean, it's like she's, I don't know, a different person. You know, her personality has become different.
Apparently she fancies herself some sort of design genius or something, you know, the blood red Christmas trees and the...
Yeah,
I know. Blood red
Christmas trees.
Yeah, it's just twisted and bizarre. But I tell you what, Reggie, you waited a long time, and I appreciate it. And I'm going to try to work in a couple more calls here before the evening's out. You take care of yourself, okay. And happy holidays, my friend.
Yeah, you do too, Bob. And one more thing. Do you think he's actually going to shut down the government, or is this just another one of his bluffs?
Bluff
number 21.
He's going to, I think, see, it's a partial shutdown.
Right. Well, and the deadline is Friday.
It's Friday, and I would not be surprised to see that come and go. And he'll try to blame the Democrats, but the Democrats have no power yet.
Right.
And his real problem is with the wackadoodle freedom carcass people in the House and the Senate, who actually relish the idea of a government shutdown. But the thing is, he got cornered by Chuck Schumer into admitting that he would take the blame for the shutdown.
Right.
And the calculus is that, you know, this is the end of 2018.
Right.
We are just a little less than 2 years away from the next presidential election, and the American people will have forgotten it by then.
Right. And then Nancy Pelosi confronted him with that, too. They were both at the White House with him, confronting him with the possible government shutdown.
They
both confronted him.
But again,
go ahead.
He neither knows nor cares how the government works. That's
right.
You know, when you are in a battle of wills with a person who has no wit,
right.
And by wit I don't mean funny, I mean intelligence.
Right.
You're kind of fighting a losing battle any way you slice it.
Right. Right. But won't the government shut down the American working people?
Well, it's gonna be hard on certain sectors.
Yeah.
The people who are deemed essential and have to keep working are going to be working, you know, without getting paid for however long it lasts.
Right.
And that'll be, like TSA people at the airport who will probably be more surly than ordinary.
Right. And I guess Chuck Schumer said this is yet another one of his temper tantrums. And Nancy Pelosi said his masculinity is sincerely and sorely and severely in question here in terms of the government shutdown here.
But for instance, the Pentagon, Health and Human Services, Department of Education, Department of Energy, and water programs are all fully funded through September 30th of next year.
Right.
But people like TSA will have to be on the job.
Right, but what about people who work for the government? They won't get paid either.
Well, I mean, we're talking about people who work for the government. TSA works for the government.
Right. We don't want that to happen, but I'm afraid it might and it might not, like you said, a partial government shutdown.
And
it may not.
But I think you've got to run that risk because throwing $5 billion down a rat hole for his ignorant, stupid, dumb, idiotic wall. You can't do that. There has to be a line in the sand somewhere, and that looks like it.
Right, and I hope the Democrats draw that line in the sand. Have they already done so?
I don't see him caving. You know, they'll offer him 1.6. See, they gave him like $1.6 billion for his stupid wall last year, and most of the money's still there. It hadn't been spent.
Right. Do you think they'll do it again this year, or are they going to stand up and buck him? You know what I mean?
It remains to be seen, but so far it doesn't look like Schumer and Pelosi are blinking. So.
Right. I hope they don't.
I mean, they're putting forward proposals, but
right.
the White House seems to be in a bunker mentality.
Right. Yeah, right. And it's all because of him. It's all his fault. Well, he is in the GOP's fault, correct?
He's awful. He is just, and again, he has no idea of how or why government works, nor does he care.
Right. He's just in it for himself and his family. and his friends too, I believe.
And his foundation had to agree to shut down today after being proven to be a great big howling fraud monstrosity. But anyway, I got to roll, Reggie. You take care, my friend.
And you do too, Bob.
Bye now.
Bye.
That's Reggie calling from Georgia. And over to Scott. Is that you?
That is me. And I was prepared. I had the earbuds in the proper configuration.
Oh, yay.
Jeez. I was going to call in just with a quick TV viewing tip. But you and Reggie and you and Tracy's conversations have inspired me.
Well, that's the way it's supposed to work here. One conversation triggers another.
To bring a couple of items to the list, and I'll go quickly because I know we're up against time. But I don't know, Bob. Over the years, I've had more than a few erotic fantasies. And
I
can say in a loud, steady voice that none of them, absolutely none of them, have included any member of the Trump family. So, good for me. I guess that's a sign of good mental hygiene.
If that's and you know what? If that's as far as your announcement goes, we're going to be okay.
Yeah, well, that's it. I just want to make that that perfectly clear. Melania and fork etiquette. The key question here is, does Melania know which fork to use when her hubby's presidency is done? That would be a primary question.
Oh, wait a minute. Yeah, you're good for a jingle there.
I just do it for the cowbells. But anyway, you and Tracy were talking about pound cake. I will email you this evening my great-great-aunt Effie's...
Oh, no, not old, Effie's pound cake.
...old pound cake recipe. She was born in 1867. She was Aunt Emma's older sister. And I'll send you the recipe, and it'll take you home. Wonderful stuff.
Oh, I bet it. I bet it is. I just bet it is.
Oh, and dense, moist, and dense.
Now, Aunt Effie, was she the good one or the somewhat?
She was the prim, proper, rather tall for that era. Victorian. She had a very Victorian bearing.
Because I know there were two sisters, and one was prim and proper.
Yeah, that was Effie.
And the other one was...
Emma, who I'm sure she smoked dope back in the 40s. Well, she got busted for running numbers in the 40s. I wasn't going to talk about this tonight, but she was managing an apartment house.
So Effie made the pound cakes, and Emma, like...
got the munchies and ate them. I don't know.
But yeah.
Effie's only concession to letting loose was every week there would be professional wrestling on TV.
Okay, so Effie was the wrestling aficionado.
Yeah, she would turn on the wrestling, and she'd have a plate of egg salad sandwiches and a couple of cans of Ham's beer, and she would sit on the edge of her chair screaming, kill him, scratch his eyes out.
Yep, okay.
To the TV, and she would turn the volume down because she didn't like to hear him grunting and groaning. So
yeah, and so I'm imagining that pound cake recipe is probably one of those where you sift the flour, and there's probably enough butter to put in put a dent in the national supply, and
it's like a pound of everything.
Yeah,
pretty much. It's traditional pound cake, but it's great. It's great stuff.
And when it's that dense, it holds the rum so well.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. I hope your bottle of rum is a big bottle of rum because, it will soak it up. You were talking about the border wall and who's going to pay for it. I think the main consideration is what to make it out of. And you want to find tried and true materials. You want to find materials that have been pre-tested and are worthy. So I think they ought to create the border wall and make it out of Hillary's emails. Besides, nobody has ever been able to get over them. So that would be my
Is that of your own creation?
No, I saw that on Facebook.
Okay, I had to check before the cowbell was awarded. Okay.
And you are speaking to someone who in early 1985 visited England and Scotland And I actually had in East Yorkshire some people I was visiting up there, some actual homemade Yorkshire pudding. And I didn't know. I always thought it was a dessert of some sort, but I was disabused of that notion, and it was quite good.
Yeah, when the English talk about pudding, they don't mean the same thing that we mean when we talk about pudding. It's one of those linguistic divergences.
Yeah. And I wanted to comment on the White House staff turnover. And I would think that a person could become pretty damn wealthy from just having the printing concession for all the new business cards and official departmental stationery, what with all the changes. Because you can't just cross out a name and pencil in a new name on the official stationery or on the business
cards. No, but they have their own printing office.
Yeah, well, you could make some serious scratch if you worked it right. And you got to figure, Trump's probably figured out a way to work. See, that's what he's done with the $1.6 billion for the wall. He's trying to work a way where he can tap into some of that cash, some of that loot, you know? But, okay, now the TV
Yeah, he just wants to get his book, his beak wet, right?
Yes, yeah. Dipping his beak. The TV viewing tip, and I told you a couple of weeks ago, I'm trying out Showtime. And one of the things that you get on Showtime is access to their app called Showtime Anytime. And who knows how long it took them to come up with that name. But you can watch virtually everything that they show on Showtime. You can watch on demand with Showtime Anytime. And I discovered a four-part documentary on there called The Fourth Estate. Have you heard of this?
No.
I wasn't even sure what it was because they didn't give a real good description about it. So I fired up the old Roku last night in the wee hours and watched all four episodes. Basically, it is a behind-the-scenes look at the New York Times of how they covered Trump's first year in office. And it was quite good. I mean, you all the time hear him ranting and raving about fake news and the failing New York Times. Well, first of all, the New York Times, in terms of circulation and especially online, has never done better. So there's that aspect of so-called failing. But to get a sense of the professional journalists who were covering Trump's first year in office, you really get first of all, you get to see how difficult and even mundane the work is. You know, digging out facts and figures and elements of stories. And there's a hint of Woodward and Bernstein in the film All the President's Men, because journalism is a even in today's fast-paced environment, news environment, where there is no end to the news cycle, it's 24/7, literally, there is a certain amount of plotting, PLODDING, that goes into the mix. And anybody who has Showtime, get the Showtime Anytime app and watch all four episodes, and in terms of being informative, it'll do that, and it'll give you a behind-the-scenes look at how a newspaper operates in the modern world. But it'll also serve to help continue to prove that Trump is, you know, just a big fat liar. It's called The Fourth Estate, and I recommend it highly. And also The Circus, which we talked about not long ago.
Right.
Heilman and Mark, what's his name, who got in trouble, and then they replaced him with Alex Wagner. And also McCain's campaign guy, the bald-headed guy.
Oh, Steve Schmidt.
Steve Schmidt is on in there, as well as Mark McKinnon. And that's a very well-done program. And both of them, if you're having trouble keeping track of the sins of Trump and the madness that constitutes the presidency in today's world. Both of those, the circus and the Fourth Estate, they're step by step. They're chronological because that's the type of documentaries they are. But they're really worthwhile. I would recommend them, even if you don't have Showtime, you know, treat yourself to something for the holiday and get it for a month, you know, just long enough to watch some of these shows. Because I hadn't realized that they had the kind of commitment to documentaries. I knew that HBO did, because I've had HBO for years. But Showtime's not really too shabby in terms of documentaries.
So, okay, well, it's beyond my reach, so I will have to take your word for it.
Well, you're dealing with more mundane things. You're dealing with how to do the Yorkshire pudding and fucking tires. Jesus, I hate. That's one of the reasons I'm glad I don't have a car anymore. I miss the convenience of it, but I don't miss parking hassles. I don't miss insurance payments. I sure as hell don't miss gasoline prices.
No, no.
You know? But I don't know. It's just a new bit of craziness every damn day. Let me see here. Is that it? Is that all for me? Am I done? Hold that fork up so I can see what you're going to do with it. Oh, giving Trump a chance. Now, you know me as the relentless optimist. And there for a brief span of time after he got elected, I actually considered thinking foolishly, as I often do, that he might pivot and go from candidate mode to president mode. But nothing in my experience of Trump led me to believe that that was going to be happening. So I quickly, that notion of pivoting and giving him a chance quickly dissipated. Because he may be a lot of things, but one main thing that he is, and I'll close with this, he is predictable. How predictable? He is as predictable as intestinal gas after a baked bean dinner. And I think that that sums him up as well as anybody has today.
And managed to ruin supper for people in the Pacific time zone. So, yeah.
So.
It's the blazing it's the Blazing Saddles bean scene.
Yeah, there you go. That's the Trump dynamic in a nutshell.
Ain't it, though. Scott, have yourself a good evening, my friend.
I will, Bob, and thank you for all the good stuff.
All right. You're welcome. Thanks for your patience.
You're right. It is hard to maintain a mundane delivery, and I think I do it best when I say, we're all screwed, Bob.
We're all screwed, Scott.
Yeah, except I don't think we are. I think we're turning the corner.
I hope we are. It's like something Randy in PA said just a few minutes ago. We've all got to get to January 3rd without the White House setting off nukes.
Well, yeah. Now, see, I could have gone all evening without having that in my head. Thanks.
Yeah, I know. I know.
All right, man. Take care.
All right. See you, Scott. Bye now.
Bye-bye.
And that brings us to an end of the program this evening. So if you're listening to the podcast, there are two tins of Palmans remaining, and only two. And if you want one, chime in overnight, but there are only two. Tracy will be getting one. Darlene will be getting one. And let's see, where are we? So we knocked down 130 of the 380 we needed to raise. So tomorrow will be 450 for prayer meeting Wednesday. So thank you very kindly. Enjoy the Palmans. And thank you, Charlie, for getting us started this evening. And let's see. Thanks to all of you for sharing your precious finite time engaging in the program. Thank you so very much for your support of the program. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff. Thanks to Sparky and Steve in the chat room. Thank you to our news ninjas. Thank you Brother Deacon Asa, headon.live. Thank you, John Fox in Australia. Thank you, Ben Birch, whiterosesociety.org. And thanks to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Later, y'all.